Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, December 9th, 2019. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern until midnight. If you are listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to National Liberty Alliance and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. You can click on a donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week on our scripture reading. We're in the Gospel of Mark. Gospel of Mark, chapter 8, verses 1 through 10. And in those days, the multitude, being very great and having nothing to eat, Jesus called his disciples unto him, and said unto them, I have compassion on the multitude, because they now have been with me 3 days, and have nothing to eat. And if I send them away fasting to their own houses, they will faint by the way, for various reasons of them come from far. And his disciples answered him, From whence can a man satisfy these men with bread here in the wilderness? And he asked them, How many loaves have ye? And they said, 7. And he commanded the people to sit down on the ground. And he took the 7 loaves, and gave thanks, and brake, and gave to his disciples to set before them. And they did set them before the people. And they had a few small fishes, and he blessed and commanded to set them also before them. So they did eat, and were filled. And they took up of the broken meat that was left 7 baskets. And they that had eaten were about 4,000. And he sent them away. And straightway he entered into a ship with his disciples, and came into the parts of Dalmatia. That was the Gospel of Mark, chapter 8, verses 1 through 10. Okay, tonight we don't have a particular topic we're going to be focusing in on. I've been pretty busy doing some writing. We've got another paper we're working on, and we'll probably read that paper, if it's not too long, next week. But anyway, we also have been filing other papers, people with non-judicial foreclosures. We've been trying to help those people out, and others, a few habeas corpuses, and so on. Jan, do we have any, I guess we'll go right to questions and announcements, and then we'll see if Brent is here. Do you have any questions there, or yeah. Any announcements?
Yes, we have a couple questions here. The first question is, I understand that there is expected that a blanket censorship is coming to YouTube on December 10th, which would be tomorrow. And I've heard that major patriotic channels, X22, Report, Truth and Art, TV, and of course the Q-related channels. Are there any alternatives to YouTube out there as a plan B? And are these previously mentioned YouTube channels prepared to make the necessary move to keep the people informed if and when the channels are taken down? Is NLA keeping in touch with them to support them if there is a breach?
Well, we know pretty much as anyone else knows. We don't have any special information on any of that, and I guess we'll see what happens tomorrow. I've heard about it. I was a little concerned myself. You know, we're getting ready to start our YouTube, and I've been wondering if we should try to also set up some kind of a backup somewhere else ourselves. But again, I don't know how far or how long they're going to be able to get away with doing what they're doing, because clearly they're playing part of a conspiracy to subvert this, you know, the United States of America, the people, the Constitution. And I really do think, you know, from watching things and listening pretty carefully, I'm sure the case is going to be made concerning a lot of the news medias that have been supporting this coup. And it's more than just a coup against the President of the United States most recently. A coup has been going on for quite some time. It goes all the way back to Jackson and even further than that. You know, we've had quite a few people who, presidents, I think it was 4 or 5 of them altogether, that have been assassinated, and one of them, of course, Jackson, was an attempted assassination, and all of them were directed directly to the bank. And that I understand. I heard on some news, and we'll see how things go, but the Federal Reserve has lost control. They no longer have control. So don't know who has control over that. I'm sure, you know, well, I'm sure we do through, you know, President has worked something out with that. But whatever's going on there, I'm not sure. I'm sure we'll find out soon. But I know today some information was going to be leaked, and not leaked, but actually released. And thus far, I haven't heard of that information being released. But I suppose because of that known date of the 9th, that the enemies of liberty, if I may, you know, put on this Monday program that they had concerning the meeting with trying to dispose of the president through Congress. I know the judicial, they had that meeting with the judicial, goodness, what would you call it? Well, anyway, the judicial group can't even think of it. All right, anyway, with that meeting going on, I think that came out planned in order to subvert and push away the information that was supposed to have been released, I believe, on the 9th, or it could be the 10th. Tomorrow is the 10th, but I'm pretty sure I heard the 9th. So anyway, the Judicial Committee is what I was trying to think of, and going through, you know, the process with President Trump. So I'm sure that was probably pushed off a few more days, and we'll see what happens as time goes on. But as far as any kind of information on these groups that are trying to shut us down, particularly on YouTube, you know, Google, YouTube, all of those things, Facebook, they're all connected. And they've been playing games with that for quite some time. But we'll see what happens. I have no further answers on that. What else you got, Jan? Did I get disconnected? Am I here?
You're here, John.
You were here. I was just muted at the moment. Next one is, any idea on the current numbers on the California governor recall? I can't find any numbers. The last time anything was mentioned on TV, it was somewhere around 600,000 plus. And the required number for recall is just under 1.5 million signature. Anybody listening in from California may know, or maybe you've heard.
Yeah, I wasn't familiar with that. I'm not aware of that. Were you aware of that, Jan?
Yeah, I was aware they were trying it, and I was hoping it was going to succeed, but they're apparently still a ways from it.
Well, again, therein is the power of the committeeman. If the people control the power of the committeeman, they would get together in their election districts, particularly in that particular state, and they could have worked out that pretty easily and pretty quickly. If they can get a consensus coming together. But, of course, there are no committeemen in, at least no elected committeemen in California or any state, and that's what we're trying to resurrect, of course, is the committeeman in all of the states. So we'll see what happens with that. When did they start that recall? Do you know when they started to collect petitions?
Oh, it was a month or two ago, wasn't it?
Okay, so that's quite a long time ago, and again, if the committeemen, if the people were in charge and took control of the committeemen in that state, they could have performed that in a week. It doesn't take long, they just would have to have a state meeting on a particular, in this situation, it would have to be a state meeting because it's a governor, and they need to get the signatures across the state. They can't be consolidated in one certain area. There has to be so many coming out of all of the counties, and then a certain number collectively, whatever that may be. I heard 1.5 million is quite high. I didn't think it would be that high. Do we have any idea how many people voted in the last governor election? Because it's a percentage of that is what's required, and I don't remember what that percentage is.
I do not know that
number. Right, so anyway, I have no info on that, but again, could have been done. If the people take control, we could do it next time. All right, what else do we have?
Okay, this is an announcement, and it's unfortunately very, very late. I just, at about 8:16, got a notice from a fella that says there are two court hearings tomorrow at 9 a.m. First for civil harassment, attorneys against him, and at 11 a.m. for an eviction hearing in Santa Clara Superior Court, located at 191 North 1st Street, San Jose, California. And these are scheduled in Department 11 at 9 a.m. and in Department 8 at 11 a.m. And he would greatly appreciate it if any people could come and be witnesses there. Unfortunately, he didn't get it in earlier, so we could have sent out an announcement for it through the...
All right, you want to give that address again, date and time? It's
yes.
Going to be tomorrow, you're saying, the 10th?
Tomorrow morning, yes, at 9 a.m.
What town, what state, and what,
it's in
what town?
California.
Is it a county?
It's in Santa Clara Superior Court, located at 191 North 1st Street in San Jose, California. The first scheduled hearing is at in Department 11 at 9 a.m. and in Department 8 at 11 a.m. So there's two hearings, one at 9 and one at 11. The first is in Department 11 and the other is in Department 8. And they're both in the Santa Clara Superior Court, located at 191 North 1st Street in San Jose, California.
All right, I guess, some advice for that, because if they're planning on trying to settle that tomorrow, they're probably just going to go through with that, of course. What someone wants to do, the individual, what's the individual's first name? Do we have a first name?
Fareed.
Okay, what is it?
Fareed, F-A-R-E-E-D, I believe.
Fareed. Okay, well, one of the things you want to do if you haven't done it is to challenge the jurisdiction. And also make note that this process is going forward without due process and therefore is unlawful. And those are two positions you might want to make and challenge the court for a decision in jurisdiction. And one of the things, if that judge decides right then and there that they have jurisdiction, then you can move for that judge to be removed because that judge is biased. I mean, how could they know until they hear the case from both sides? Because the judge can't make a decision like that. When something is challenged from one side, it's the other side that's got to answer. And then only off the information that's in there can they respond. The other thing is ultimately that also proves the fact that they already believe that they have jurisdiction, so they're already biased. Those are a couple of positions or points that could be made. Definitely anybody that comes would want to, that hears wants to make an affidavit. So if you can, plan on, taking some notes and then getting that paper to a notary, which you could do right there in the court if you do it by pen and paper, or you can email it or however you can arrange it for that individual to get those affidavits. And so they can use those affidavits in the future. But the challenge of jurisdiction is the key that might be able to help you survive that day in court. If it's just the beginning of those things, they always try to scare you. It's going to go on and drag on probably for a while, but you need to do something to deal with that problem. All right, anything else?
That's all of the questions. There are a couple announcements.
All right.
The first is that you were on Patriot Soapbox again Sunday at 1 o'clock, and I've got a copy of the interview, and it's posted on the website. If you go to the Reality Check tab at the top in the blue banner, and then scan down and click on radio and TV interviews, you'll find John and Gerard on Patriot Soapbox right at the top of the list. It looks like we've probably got enough researchers right now to finish tracking down the election laws. We still need, and this is a little different, this is workers to work on the NLA wiki, which is a compilation of all of our Monday calls, and it'll be referenceable and so on. So it'll be a lot of Word or other word processor work transcribing. We're not transcribing. They're all transcribed, but setting them up and making different files and so on. That's a huge, huge, huge project, and we could use a number of people to help out. I think we have the maximum, like, 3 to 5 people right now working on it, and we could certainly use more. And we could also use a few more people to volunteer for the leadership and the committee men project. We have 10 groups up, and we need 10 volunteers to lead these groups. I think I have a couple, three in mind, but we still need probably 7 more. So if you're interested at all, please send me an email at jan@nationallibertyalliance.org, and we'll go from there. And that's about all I've got on announcements, John.
Have you been passing on all that information?
Which information are you questioning?
Well, all of you know, the information on each one of the state's election laws. And again,
I sent that all, everything I had, to Jeff, and he's working on it.
Okay. So, and you say we got them all pretty much now at this point?
No, I think we have like 10, 12 states left.
Okay. If you have, do you have a list? Maybe you want to read that out, and maybe someone
I hesitate to do that because I sent that list to Jeff a few days ago, and I haven't gotten a response back as to which of the list of states we needed he has worked on and found. I could read you the list, but he may have already done them, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, so we'll hold off till next week. We'll see where he's got. He's got a lot of work ahead of him yet to do. So, and Jeff, maybe you can give me a call tomorrow or something. We'll go through a few things. You know, the real key thing that we need is to know when the designating petitions are started within that state and when is the last day for filing those papers. Usually it's a six-week window. I think I mentioned before here in New York, it's something like, I don't know, the middle of April. And let's see, January, March, April, May, June. I want to say more May. I think it ends in June, if I recall. But in any event, that doesn't matter. It's a six-week window. And so you have to get your designating petitions filled out and in within those 6 weeks. And running for committeeman, most people only need maybe 6, 8, 10 or 15 signatures. The max is usually around 20, but very few election districts are so populated. Usually that would be more populated in the city areas. You'd probably be pretty populated where you might need, you know, 16 to 20 signatures in each one of these different election districts. So, but we'll figure that out. And we're going to start putting together, you know, I've already started putting together. We just haven't completed it and gotten it up. But we're going to get up some training videos on this, and we'll be announcing those training videos once they're up and getting the information out. And it'll be a detailed information. I think it'll be 3 videos. I know we have to do one on the, which is already done, on the filling out of the designating petition. We may do one that expands on the power and the authority of the committeeman. And the third one will be really on the states. What we may do is we'll probably make a list of the states and what their time period is for filing designating petitions. And we'll also go through how and where people go to get the list for their election district, to walk their election district to get their signatures. There will probably be some resistance, and we'll talk about that resistance and why that resistance might be there again in a video on this. We'll do, like I said, a video on this, but we will get the written list posted somewhere. And we'll talk about the type of resistance you're going to get and how we're going to get around it and defeat that problem. So again, I know originally we were planning on doing at the beginning of every month to do something, speaking on these things, but it makes more sense really to do videos and then be here for Monday nights when people have questions or concerns or issues or something shows up that, you know, some strategy they're using that we haven't discovered and they're not sure how to go around to deal with that. And even if they do figure a way to deal with that, they should come and talk to us on the Monday night programs to expound on that so we can know, for others to know if they try to use the same kind of a resistance plan or whatever you want to call that. But it really is pretty simple. It's as simple as really going down to the Board of Election and requesting a list of the people within your election district for designating petition. They're going to ask a lot of questions. They're going to get resistance. The party's going to get involved. We'll talk about that. In some cases, you won't. In some cases, it's old hat, and they won't really give you too much of a problem. But usually, the chair, the county chairman of the committees, usually get those lists, and usually they'll have a special meeting coming up. Usually, well, I know here in New York, again, it's usually in a warmer time coming up in May and June. So they usually do some kind of a cookout or something or a meeting somewhere. People come in, throw a few bucks, and they have a dinner. It's a way for them to make money, too. And then that's when they hand out all of the information, the walking lists. But that's party control. That's a party association controlling that, and we don't want any part of that. But you know what might be interesting is maybe people should go to that thing and get a list. Well, not a good idea. Let's ignore that, because they'll send you into the wrong election district, and they don't really put you into the right election districts anyway. And, of course, they don't want you to really walk your own petition. So, but we'll get into all those details. We'll do it in videos. There is a page we have set up right now. If you go to nationallibertyalliance.org, and anybody who wants to become a committee man, on the blue bar, see the committee man, you can click on Become a Committee Man. And when you click on that, we'll be putting more information here. And this is where we'll put the details of all of the counties and when they're walking them. And so on, for each state. So most of your information will be here, and we'll probably put different links up on, for instance, we'll probably put a link up there calling into something with the designating petition, filling out the designating petition or whatever, and you would click on that one and you'll get a video, and under the video will be some more information. And so, again, there might be two or three videos we'll put in here. Now, becoming a committee man, again, is really simple, okay? Anybody interested in saving this nation, anybody who calls themselves a patriot and gets is involved, well, you need to learn to become a committee man, then, because then you can really get involved and you can really make a difference and make a decision that counts. Now, our voice will count as elected committee men. So we need as many committee men as possible to take control in a comfortable way, to take control of the entire nation. We need about 15,000 people across the nation. But we could do it with a lot less. We could do it with minimum of, let's say, 5 per state. But it's a struggle, 5 individuals, but we can accomplish it. I would like to get 5 or so many people in each county. It'd be nice to get 1 person in every county, at least. And then they come together as a group. I know New York here has 62 counties, so it would be 62 people if that happened that way. And we are doing both parties. People who are already Republicans, of course, you're going to run for the Republican side, and we try to get as many Democrats as we can. We do have some Democrats with us. They can run for the Democrat side. Anybody who is not a Republican or a Democrat, you've got to change your parties, or if you don't have a party listed, you can't become a committee man. So you have to do your parties, and you need to do that now. Change your parties or get into a party if you're not in a party. I know some people are registered to vote, but they don't choose a party, so therefore they don't participate in the primaries. We should be participating in the primaries. But definitely that's when the committee man runs. And you can't, I know there's a time here, if you're going to change parties, you have to do it so many months before the process starts. If you haven't chosen a party yet, or you haven't even, filed for voting, you can do that almost any time up to, I think there is a short period of time, like let's say the week before the election, the primary, you have to be in it for before that. When they walk the, let me do it the other way, when they walk in the petitions. But again, each state may be different with those rules. I'm not even sure what New York is on that one. But again, you must be a Democrat or a Republican to run for a committee man. Running for a committee man in any other party has no power or authority. It doesn't do anything for anybody, because the two major parties that control the whole process is the Democratic and the Republican parties. And again, we're short on Democrats, so anybody that is going to file and choose a party or change a party because they're not either Republican or Democrat, we suggest to get as many people into the Democratic side as possible. And a requirement that we're requiring everyone to go through is to take the course, the government by consent course, at least be in it and moving through it, because you need to know the Constitution. After all, you're going to quiz these people who are running for office to select somebody to go into the primaries and to become elected in that position, become nominated in the primaries and elected in the general election. They do need we do need to understand the Constitution and be familiar with it in order to ask these people questions, because we must require these people that are running for office to know the Constitution. Now, the committee man that runs this coming year in 2020 doesn't take their position in office, so to speak, until 2021, January of 2021, and then it's a two-year period. Okay, then they go up for a re-election again every 2 years. Every even year, committeemen are cleaned out nationwide, and people come back in. And you can run as often as you want. If there are a lot of people finally running for the committeeman position, we want to give others the opportunity to do this also. But right now, there are no elected committeemen, as far as we know, anywhere in the United States. And those exceptions might be in New York. There are some people that may have continued the rightful process here in New York, because we were teaching this for quite some time. And I'm sure most of those people, if not all of them, are members with us here at National Liberty Alliance, and they're kind of aware of what's going on and where we're heading with this plan, I would presume anyway. So again, everybody should become an elected committeeman. If you're interested in saving this nation, you're interested in being a consenter to our government, to have some power and authority to tell these people enough is enough and, you know, that's it, stop or we're going to get rid of you, with power to be able to do that, well, that's what the committeeman is. And one more time, I'll mention the fact that it's only about 40 hours a year, not much more than that. The even years are the most busy years. The odd years is the least busy. But in any event, it's 40 hours approximately a year. It's always in the evening, and it's 2 hours here or 3 hours here, and you're coming together to interview people that want to get on the ballot to become elected to whatever position, whatever political office they're running for. Okay, so anyway, everybody, even all of the people that are becoming administrators should get involved and become committeemen also. There is no conflict of interest in that. All right, do we have anything else, Dan?
I have the states here. If I can run through them quickly. If anybody happens to be in one and has the information, they can send it to me.
Did you get in touch with Jeff?
He isn't sure where he stands right now.
Okay.
But I had the ones that I had sent him that were missing. I can run through them.
Okay.
That would be Alaska, Hawaii, Kansas, Maryland, Massachusetts, Nebraska, New Hampshire, Ohio, Oklahoma, Rhode Island, South Carolina, and West Virginia.
All right, so anybody living in any of those states and would like to help us out, search the Internet and find a PDF copy of the election law. Sending us to a website doesn't help unless we can download the PDF copy, but we're looking for people to actually do that for us and to save us that time, because it takes a while to go through 50 states. And get that information, you can email it to jan@nationallibertyalliance.org. And just do an attachment, or get a hold of Jan if you have a problem, getting it to him that way. Has there been a problem receiving these through the email, Jan? Are any of them very large that have a problem?
Most of them are small enough that they can go right through email or okay. Skype, either one. I think
right.
There was one where I had a problem, but we got that fixed.
Okay. So we'll try to solve any problem if you can't get it through the email to Jim. But again, it needs to be a PDF copy because we have to search through that for keywords in order to find out when the designating petitions are being, you know, when they walk them and what the end date, the last day for filing is. And again, it's usually, I know here in New York, it's a six-week window. We have 6 weeks to walk your district. And again, in most places, it's like 5 to 10, you know, signatures is about it. That's all you need in your election district, which is in your neighborhood. You know, you go outside your door, it may be the street to the right of you or the street to the left of you. It's right there where you live. And so you don't have to travel. Very simple to do. You know, I used to, when I did it, I usually did it on a Saturday or a Sunday. I'd walk through and get the signatures. I usually get them done in one day. And, I mean, goodness, you only need five. In my case, I only needed five. I get 10, you know, even though I only needed 5 or 6. So people should always get a couple extra, and we'll talk about the reasoning behind that another time. Again, we'll deal with that in our videos or information that we post up on that page. And some of the strategies and why we do this or that. Okay, are there any other announcements? Or
no, that's it for tonight, John.
We don't have anything planned on Mondays at 8 p.m., do we?
At what time?
8 p.m.
8 p.m., well, next Monday you scheduled your IRS thing.
Right, I wanted to make sure it was clear.
Well, we normally have an 8 p.m. call, but we decided not to meet next Monday just so you could come in and gather people for the IRS.
All right. Anybody who has an IRS problem, if you're interested in talking about it and seeing what we can do about it, we don't have a real, you know, we're going to cover a little bit of that in the paper we're writing now concerning the treason by the United States Supreme Court and the federal district courts and both houses of Congress. And, of course, not all of them are guilty of treason, but a good share of them, I'm sure is. You know, a lot of the people that have created most of these problems are long gone, but others have kept it alive. And, you know, the United States Supreme Court, for instance, they should have stopped this a long time ago. And I presume the reason why they haven't is because of threat of life. You know, they sort of stuck between a rock and a hard place, and they can't move. But once the deep state is totally drained, and we're moving into phase three, I understand it is, which is really now cleansing time. So that's what we're moving into now. I think it's called phase three. And I think phase four is trials. So, but that's the presumption at this point in time. And matter of fact, the 9th, wasn't it the 9th when all of this information was supposed to have been put out there, Jan? Are you familiar?
Yeah, the report came out today, and oh, it made the FBI and so on look so good, and there were only a few things they did that weren't so great. And
right. Well, there was another one coming out though too, wasn't there?
That comes out Wednesday.
Cars? Oh, that's Wednesday.
I think that's Wednesday.
Okay. Yeah, we were aware of that one, and we were aware that it wasn't going to be favorable to the truth, but it's going to be protective to the deep state. That was the assumption. And but the Barr one is his information is supposed to be released. So then I'm off on the date. It's the 11th and not the 9th.
I believe Barr speaks on 11th Wednesday, yeah.
Okay. All right, because that's going to be the big one. So, you know, hopefully next Monday we'll have a lot of good news to be talking about. But as far as this IRS is concerned, I'm not sure exactly what we're going to do, but I do want to work on a plan dealing with the IRS and then file something at a strategic point in time, which I think will be soon. You know, I think it'll still be this year. I mean, we're in the last month of the year, and it very well may be this year, maybe this month sometime or January. It's going to be very, very soon. But again, we do have another paper going out, hopefully we'll finish it up tomorrow try to get it perfected. Nothing ever really gets totally perfected. We do the best we can. And on this one, Jan, I think we're going to mail to all 94 federal district courts, so maybe you can put an alert out there for people to be ready to see who we can get to do the filings. I don't think we're going to have many more of doing it that way, but this one I'd like to do it that way, and maybe there'll be another one. But this one, I think it's important to really get at least the federal district courts notified on this paper, the governors, and of course, you know, the United States Supreme Court and both houses of Congress and so on. So see what kind of people, you know, group of people you can get together and get some commitments on that.
Okay.
And I, like I said, I'd like to try to get it out this week. I think we should be able to. And hopefully it'll be short enough that we'll be able to read it next Monday and go through it and hopefully discuss it a little bit. Okay, so again, the IRS, next Monday, anybody with the situation, 8 o'clock. I know I've had some people trying to contact me through different sources, email and so on. I'm not going to talk about this individually because I'm only going to be repeating myself over and over again. But really, I really want to get together and see where people are at and what kind of an assault they're doing. And I'd like to ask the people questions to understand a little more on how they may be dealing with others. I've been dealing with the IRS for over 20 years. You know, so I've got a lot of information on how they operate and what they do. But others may have some information that I'm not aware of. And I'm hoping that on that Monday, next Monday, we'll formulate at least a partial plan, if not a plan at all, altogether. But maybe I'll gather the information and try to think about it for a while and discuss it with others, and maybe in a week come out with the plan, and then, you know, we'll talk about it maybe on a Monday night to let everybody know how we're going to approach this. But they definitely have to be dealt with. It's an easy win if truth could prevail. The problem is they don't want truth to prevail. But that pressure's on, and this will be more pressure. And at some point, truth will prevail. It has to, because it always does prevail. All right, if that's it, Gerard, are you here? I don't see Gerard in tonight. I spoke with him earlier. He said he was going to be in. I guess I don't see him here. If Gerard pops in, let me know.
Okay.
The other thing is Brent here? Yeah. Have you spoke to Brent to try to work out the problem he was having connecting?
I've been having trouble trying to connect with him. I can't seem to find a good email address for him and so on, even a phone number.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully he's...
All right, let's see. Brent, if you're here, maybe you can unmute yourself and let us know. If not, if you can unmute yourself, well, you can jump into the queue if you can unmute yourself, and we'll see someone new jumping in the queue. We'll know it's you. Maybe we'll recognize your phone number. But I don't see him.
I don't think he's here. I just looked up his phone number. He's not here yet.
I can't hear you. Try that again, Terry.
I just looked up his phone number. I don't see him here yet.
All right. Make sure Jan gets a hold of his phone number so they can connect. All right, so then we'll just go right into an open forum. If Brent shows up, we'll break off to him for 20 minutes or 15 minutes or whatever he wants.
I see. I just did get another question if you want to take it.
Sure.
It's from someone who... we had sent, let's see, he says, I did send a notice of removal over 2 weeks ago. The judge and lawyers know the case has been moved to federal court via NLA support. However, the court is acting if nothing has changed and are still encroaching on my property. Could a cease and desist order be a possibility?
Well, that will come about eventually out of this process. So we have to wait a certain amount of days and then we will put out an order on that. I think it's 35 days we're going to wait from the time we know they got it. We got to be over the 30 days. So, and then we will put out a cease and desist order from the court, and we'll see where that goes. Now, again, you know, we're not expecting a lot of these different courts to be obedient to the law. After all, they've been living their whole lives breaking the law, and they still don't, I think a lot of them still don't realize how much of a danger they're in, because you know, they're not going to have that protection much longer. Once the deep state is totally exposed and indictments and arrests start to take place, that whole thing's going to collapse. And they talk about this all the time. When that collapse comes, there's going to be a power vacuum, and we need to be there for that power vacuum. So again, we need more people to sign up for those positions to become administrators and also to become committeemen and learn the processes to take control of our nation. And so, you know, when that happens, that's when it's going to get a little more serious, and at some point in time, these things will take effect. But in the meanwhile, as we proceed and continue to process, you know, go forward in this, sometimes they get a little nervous and they obey and they stop. So it's rare, but it does happen. But I think closer and closer, when they realize more and more, it's going to happen more and more. And eventually, you know, we'll get justice going. After all, you know, when we, you know, with what Trump is doing and all the patriots, you know, and all the different people that are in Congress also, in the Justice Department and in the FBI and other places, and even in the federal district courts, very rare there, but even there, and even on the United States Supreme Court, once they step up to do the right thing and get back to the law, well, this is the law. The people must take control. Courts of law must be run by the people, not by the bureaucrat. That's just the way it is. That's common law, and that's the facts. And so we don't want half a right. We don't want half a liberty. We don't want half the law. We don't want half obedience. No, we demand it all. Either we get all our rights, and we get justice, and we get the truth to be held, period. Not half a truth, but all the truth. It's that or nothing, because you're not really getting a success if we only take a partial part. And what is a part? What is a half of liberty? You know, what is that? You know, it just doesn't work. All right. With that, I guess we'll move over to Q&A, unless we have anything else. Is nothing else, Jen?
No, I think that's it, John.
Okay. All right, and again, anybody next. The meeting, which is going to be Monday, next Monday, at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 1 hour before this meeting, in this room, to talk and try to get some ideas about the IRS. I already got some ideas, but I need to hear more and see what people think and try to make a plan. But there'll be no second meeting on this. We're not going to record this meeting. It's just... people that really want to participate need to be at this meeting. I know I've got about 60 or so, maybe more, responses by email. People have sent me information concerning their problems with the IRS by email. And so we should have a lot of people that would want to show up for this thing. Make sure you get it out in the next email message, Jen, concerning that particular meeting. Yeah, and I'll send out something maybe during the week to let people know, a reminder that we're going to be having that special meeting on next Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern. All right, I guess we'll move over to Q&A. Keep an eye... Oh, Gerard, are you here?
Of course.
Okay, well, you want to take the board?
Yep.
Okay.
Listen, I just want to expound on one thing before we start. I know that we have high hopes with this deep state going down and stuff, but I also have another scenario here that I think could happen, because, you know, we have Donald Trump and the Patriots on top taking care of things, and man, if they could get rid of the IRS, which I believe they're planning on doing, that'll make life easier. But everybody's got to remember that, like John just said, some of these courts and places and municipalities have been running for years and years and years under no law, basically, their own law. And it's going to be hard to root them out. There's not going to be all, you know, they won't, the federal government and Donald Trump and the FBI and all of them, they will not be able to handle what's going to happen overnight in all the local municipalities. That's why you got to remain active in your communities and that. But look, there's going to be places where that just ain't going to happen, because they're entrenched, they have their local police forces. You're going to see kind of a balkanization of America, I think. you know, it's going to get more like, you know, in Mexico, where you go into a place and you bribe the chief of police right off the bat for protection. So I could see a lot of that in these little communities where they've just been doing their own thing. So don't think that you're going to run off and shove common law down their throats, because they're going to lock you up. They got the cops. Just, you know, we're going to have to proceed with caution. And eventually they'll be routed out too, but it's not going to happen overnight. And some communities are more corrupt than other communities. It depends on the, you know, the demographics of the community. So, you know, I mean, I mean, there's some places I wouldn't want to live, because they've been out of control, and they're going to stay out of control until they bring a SWAT team in and pull them out. They're never going to stop doing what they're doing. You know what I mean? Just like we saw that movie where they had to go in with guns into the courthouse. What was that mini revolution there? I think it was in Tennessee, where they had the voting records locked up. They had a crooked mayor and a crooked police force, and the people actually formed a militia and went in with guns and had a little war, and that was not that many years ago. So I think you'll see little things like that going on.
Well, we just heard something similar to that. Did you hear that story? I'm not sure I recall particularly.
Yeah, I heard something, but I can't, not enough to really expound.
Well, a sheriff has put out a call to pull the people in as a militia, ultimately as he wants to deputize them. And I forget how that story was all about. Jaron, did you share that with me? Was it you, Gerard, that shared that story with me?
Could have been. I read a couple things like that. Yeah. But you make the point, because that's how we're going to do it. It's going to be the only way we're going to take some of these communities back is by us doing it ourselves in that fashion. Because there is a process and a procedure that, you know, look at, we got to revive it.
Mm-hmm. Jen, were you going to say something?
No, I think I did see something on that, and I might have put it in your inbox.
Yeah, I just don't remember what the story was, particularly the specifics, but it was a sheriff who was putting out a call for deputizing. He was going to deputize as many people as necessary to do something, and I forget what it was. With the guns, something with the guns.
The state had prevented, had passed a law that you couldn't own a gun, and the sheriff said, well, all the sheriffs got together and said, like two-thirds of the counties have said that they will go out and deputize anyone who wants to carry their gun.
Well, there you go. And maybe we can get that story. We should post it up on our website. You know, I know I went and spoke to my sheriff, and surprise, surprise, I'll tell you, this was a real surprise to me. 90% or more, according to my sheriff, I think there was only two sheriffs that didn't show up when we were having our problems, and they're going to refuse to take the guns away from the people, and they will assist in preventing the state police from taking the guns from the people here in New York. And that was sometime after the SAFE Act was going through and went through the process here in New York, and I went down to meet with sheriff with a group of other people. But anyway, that kind of thinking, you know, that's going to be the hard one, is trying to take weapons away from people. That's one I think the sheriffs are pretty much pretty tight on. They understand that one. But as far as dealing with the problems in our particular counties, our towns, and all these things that Gerard was talking about, the plan that we have is really to focus in, the whole plan is to take control of the federal courts. That's the key. Because once we control the federal courts, as far as a court of record is concerned, which is our unalienable right to do, okay, then once the people have control of that, then we can go after the state courts and require obedience by order of the court. And we can do that in one case across all 50 states. Once we do that, then it's a matter of working down in through the smaller courts, you know, the county courts, which are pretty most county courts, I believe, are connected to the state anyway, because they really do a lot of work that on the lower end that the state courts don't handle, and there's a lot of arbitration that'll take place there that people might sign up for, and small claims and that kind of thing. But, you know, it's the town courts that'll be the big problem, not the county courts, the town courts, the city courts, the village courts. They're the ones that don't want to lose their income. And that's where we may have the problem, as Gerard is talking about. But we will have the court system to make the orders and to go through the process. And working through that throughout the entire nation depends on the people. It depends on everybody right now, whether they're going to get involved or not, become an administrator. You know, anybody who's looking for a full-time job, a job that is really, you know, a rewarding job because you really get to fix the problems from the grassroots level. But you get to orientate the juries, the grand jury and the trial jury, and assist them in the grand jury in the writing up of their indictments or whatever their will might be, no indictment. And of course, to assist the trial courts. But that requires somewhat of an education, and it's not anything difficult. You know, this is not trying to learn to remember laws, you know, like statutes and different things of that nature. It's really pretty simple. It's really logical, self-evident information, really. So this is not difficult stuff to learn, and anybody could learn it. You just have to put your time into it. So anybody who's looking for a job or would like to switch a job, and, you know, you can start preparing for this job now by getting into the courses, because that's a prerequisite. You can't take on these positions without going through the courses. We have two courses, the civics course and the government by consent course. We may have a third course, but it may just be a book. We are definitely putting together a handbook, but we may have another course, much shorter course, just for the administrators. And even people who aren't becoming administrators, they'd like to take the course, they can take the course, of course. Knowledge is power. And you know, it's up to the people to do this. And we also have a plan to get our children re-educated, and ourselves re-educated. We have to educate ourselves first, but then we want to get our children properly educated in the schools. We want to get rid of these social programs to become socialists for our children, and let's turn them into, I hate to use the word Republicans, let's see, constitutionalists, I guess. You know, we are a republic. That is who we are, and that's what we are. And we're a republic with a natural law constitution. We are the only one with a true natural law constitution. There is none other in the entire world. And hopefully other countries will become that too. But we have to start using our constitution and applying it, because right now they are totally 100% ignoring it. And I'm talking about the courts particularly. They are ignoring the constitution. As far as they're concerned, it's null and void. It doesn't exist. And that's it. You know, the lower courts think that they're obeying and the law by obeying the statutes or whatever it is that they follow, the codes. But they're so far off the Constitution, it's pretty bad. All right, you got the board, Gerard. You take our first caller.
Okay.
And keep an eye out, if you can, Terry and Jan, for Brent if he comes in.
Brent, Indiana. Well, no, is that Brett? Brent in Indiana. Isn't Mercy?
Yeah, Pat? Brent is here now.
Oh, Brent's here. Okay. Let's unmute him and let him and leave him unmuted. Brent, we'll try to leave you unmuted if we can.
He's in the Q&A, right?
Yeah, he's down towards the bottom here. I see him. All right, let me introduce Brent. Brent is the author of the book, The Excellence of the Common Law, a great book, and his website is commonlawyer.com, right? And Brent's going to talk to us about the law. Brent?
Thank you. Funny how you say I'm here. I'm not there, wherever you are.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny how we do that? I guess, yep. I have presence. So yeah, we do that. That's
well, we're here in a space, you know.
Yeah. We've conquered.
Imagine that.
Our minds are all here in this room.
Yeah. When I get on the telephone, I have a hearing by telephone. The judge says, "Mr. Winters, are you present?" And I say, present judge, and I'm 2,000 miles away.
There you go.
there's reality and presence as difference, I guess, from being right there bodily. But we were talking about the Constitution of the United States. We've been talking about it. My comments are my own and may or may not comport with other people in the leadership of the National Liberty Alliance. And they're kind enough to let me make a few comments, and I enjoy it. So let's get started here. We left off last time. I believe we were in Article 2. Here we go. 113. Yeah, I see where I had left off. Now let's read this. This is Article 2, Section 1. Section 1, Clause 7. It says that the president talked about, no, I did that already. President Nixon. The president shall at stated times, this is Clause 7, receive for his services a compensation which shall neither be increased or diminished during the period for which he shall have been elected, and he shall not receive within that period any other emolument from the United States or any of them. An emolument. Emolument is a benefit, or a gift, or money, or an automobile, or something you give somebody as reward or as an inducement to do something. But the important point here, I think, is that compensation of the President of the United States shall neither be increased or diminished during the period for which he shall have been elected. Well, the same requirement the Constitution says is for the justices of the Supreme Court of the United States. Providing a salary for the office of president, this clause enables the man less than independently wealthy to be president of the United States. And second, the clause bars anyone from raising or lowering the president's salary during his elected term of office. Finally, the president may never accept any other emolument, that means a perk or a pay, from the general government or any state. The general government's the government we today call the federal government, so that his loyalty will remain undivided. His loyalty will remain undivided. And what is his loyalty to? This is an important question. I heard Bill Clinton say that I was elected to take care of the American people. I'm quoting. That's exactly what he said. I wouldn't want that. I wouldn't want that fella being responsible for my welfare, not even a little bit. He's like any other, well, like a lot of people, I suppose, in government. I shouldn't say all. As soon as they get control of you, they'll want your daughters, they'll want your sons, they'll want your wife, they'll want your money, whatever they can get. Well, what is he to be loyal to then? He's not going to take care of me. And the answer ought to be obvious, because the Constitution says this in the next clause. It says, Clause 8, before he, that is the fellow that got elected president, enter on the execution of his office, he shall take the following oath or affirmation. And then they give it to you exactly what he's supposed to say. I do solemnly swear. By the way, there's no other way to swear. If you're not going to swear solemnly, it's not swearing. So that's nice they say that, though. I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will faithfully execute the office of the President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. Now watch this. This oath that the law of the land, our Constitution, requires of a man as he enters the presidency of the United States is not to protect the people of the United States. It is not to be loyal to the people of the United States. It is, I'm quoting, to faithfully preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. I want to say that again. The President of the United States does not take an oath to be loyal to the people of the United States. And by the way, No American has an ultimate loyalty to the people of the United States. That's silly. Now, you might be loyal to some people who are of like kindred spirit, but that's pretty conditional. And as soon as you find out they're not of like kindred spirit and understanding about fundamental things, you better cut your loyalty off. Our duty of loyalty, by the way, loyalty arises out of law, and our duty of loyalty arises out of the law of the land. Article 6 of our Constitution says this Constitution is the law of the land. What is the law of the land? It is our common law. Our common law. The Supreme Court of the United States said in that old case way back there, in the very beginning, Murray's lessee said that the law of the land equals, I'm paraphrasing because they didn't use the word equal, but the law of the land equals due process. That phrase, the law of the land, is lifted from Magna Carta, lex terra in the Latin, it says. And it means due process. That was their phrase for due process. What is due process? It is the way things are done, not what is done. The way, the course, the path, the course of our common law, we call it today more often. It's the path we get on, the narrow path, the way things ought to be done, the fair way things ought to be done. Notice in an opportunity to be heard that's meaningful, a jury that is impaneled according to the course, the way of our common law. Again, it always comes back to that. Always. People, I was on a radio show two or three days ago, and they asked the question. A lawyer was the interviewer, and this lawyer asked me a question. It's the question that comes up over and over and over. And the question is, what is our common law? That's an important question, because our common law, the definition of it, apparently is the ever-elusive fugitive. It's hard to get your hands on. Well, what is it? Our common law is not. Let's talk about what it isn't. Our common law is due process, but you got to understand what that is. Our common law is not a list of laws. It's a way of life. Way, W-A-Y, course of process, path. That's why the Bible calls itself the way. Jesus Christ said, he didn't say, I'm the law. He said, I'm the way. The way, that word means road. I'm the path you get on. That's what I am. None of us know all the law. We couldn't learn all the list of laws you'd have to learn. I don't know them all. I've been studying law for decades. I still don't know them all, but what can I know? I can know, and I can get so I can recognize, and I can say, that ain't fair dealing. Like Kipling says of the Saxon, when he stands in the furrow by his ox, his sullen eyes gaze at you, and he says, that ain't no fair dealing. Well, you better listen to him. That was his point. Well, that's the way it is with us. Is it fair dealing? That ain't fair. That ain't a fair fight. That ain't fair play. You ain't fighting according to the rules. You're biting. You're sucker punching. You're crotch kicking. You're rabbit punching. You're hitting below the belt. The thing that's supposed to be different about us, God help us, as a common law country and Christian folk, is that we fight fair. I remember being in school. Boys always fight, you know, that's the manly thing to do, I guess. So boys are trying to be men, so there's always a fight going on, or somebody going to have a fist fight. I remember it was foreboding that anybody pull hair, bite, scratch, or kick. That was out of the question. I don't know where we got that idea, but I'm glad it was part of my life growing up. I have found that my enemies scratch, bite, and kick. And you go to court, the government doesn't fight you a fair fight. It's our job as Christian men and women in a common law country to insist upon a fair fight. A boxing match that's according to the Queensbury rules, as they say. And that's what our common law is, fundamentally. And because if the fight isn't fair, as they say in our common law tradition, the best man may not win. May the best man win. That's part of our common law. May the most meritorious case prevail. That's our common law. But that won't happen if the fighting ain't fair. Warfare warfare, according to our God, has rules. They used to be called, in the Christian world of Europe, they were called the rules of chivalry. The rules of chivalry. And everything we do in the way of process in our common law courts are the rules of chivalry. The rules of our common law courts arose out of a common law tradition called trial by battle. Trial by battle. Trial by battle, the vestige of it in America was the duel. The duel, and there were rules. There are rules to the trial by battle. And those rules that men practiced centuries ago under trial by battle, those rules are the rules of our due process. For example, in trial by battle and dueling, which occurred here in America until really very recently, the rules were always the same. You had to send somebody to challenge the other fellow. Now, isn't that something? When we challenge somebody in court, if I have a grievance against my neighbor and I want to sue him for trespass, do I get to go and serve him papers, serve him the complaint? Not only do I not get to, if I do it, I'll never get him in court because I'm not allowed to. I've got to get somebody else to do that. Well, isn't it funny? In trial by battle and dueling, that's the rules. You got to get somebody else to deliver the challenge. And in the challenge, you have to say the time and the place of the contest. Well, that's what we do at common law. When you send them service of process and the complaint, have somebody deliver it to them. It has to be personal service. That's part of the tradition of trial by battle and dueling, personal service. You can't send it to him in the mail. No, personal. You hand it to him. And when you do that, then it has to have the time and the place. Well, what good is the time and the, if the time and the place isn't on the service of process, the piece of paper that tells where the contest is going to be in so-and-so courtroom at so-and-so time at, on so-and-so date. And then if you don't do that and the other fellow doesn't show up, you're not allowed to say, well, he defaulted. Well, those are the rules of trial by battle. And then when you get in the courtroom, there are rules of evidence, rules of engagement, just as you have rules in a boxing match. I hasten to add, and I say it strongly, without exception, in all the rest of the world, that doesn't apply at all. When you go to, you don't even go to court. You go to a tribunal where there's an inquisition. There are no fundamental rights to be protected. Lawyers can't protect fundamental rights. There is no fair play. No. Everything is by the dictate of the government. It's not a trial. There's no contest. It's just a lawyer or two lawyers and a judge who is not a lawyer. He's a civil servant, dependent for his position on making sure the will of the state is followed. And they decide what they're going to do with the people before the court. Because no matter what happens, it's result-oriented. You got to come up with a result in the end that the legislation says you got to have. Now, do we do that in America? Oh, in our administrative courts, unfortunately, yes. And it's creeping over into our common law courts. But as long as we have a jury, as long as we have a fight, as long as we have a real trial, a fair play, a fair fight, we got common law. I don't care what else is said if we got that. What is fair play? Well, it's just the fairness of the rules you had when you were on the playground. Play? When you had recess at school and two boys wanted to fight. I hope you had the same experience I did. We insisted upon a fair fight. And nobody else was allowed to jump in and help the fellow either, by the way. The judge isn't allowed in our common law courts to jump in and help the prosecution, does he? Yeah, he does that sometimes, more often than he ought to. That's not fair play. Not fair play at all. Well, how far afield did I get from our constitutional text here? Oh, we were talking about the president is supposed to take this oath to faithfully execute the office of President of the United States to the best of his ability to preserve and defend what? The Constitution of the United States. What is the Constitution of the United States? Again, I say this a lot. I keep saying it. It bears repeating. The Constitution of the United States is the law of the land. Article Chapter 6 declares what our Constitution is. What is the law of the land? The phrase is lifted to say it one more time. from Magna Carta, Lex Terra, Stephen Langton, the author of Magna Carta. That was the phrase they used in those days to signify due process, fair play, fighting according to the rules. No pulling hair, no biting, no kicking, no sucker punches, no getting somebody, a bystander, to help you beat the other guy down. No, you fight according to the rules. And the loyalty of our president is not to us, it is to the land. Why do I say that? Because to preserve the law of the land is to preserve the land. And to fight for protection of the land from foreign invasion, etc., is to preserve the law of the land. Because, to go just a little deeper, I like to say this, it's hardly ever talked about, but this is the fundamentals of our common law, getting right down to the ground. And among all peoples of the earth, this is believed and has been believed substantially for ages, even those that deny our common law. There was a time when men believed, and it goes back to all men having a common source from the two fathers of Adam's race, Adam himself and that fellow called Noah and Mrs. Noah, Adam and Eve and Mr. and Mrs. Noah. It all goes back to everybody going back there. They all had the same belief, and there are many people in the world that still have this in their fundamental religion. And our common law is a tradition of religion, law, and government, as all traditions of government are. But the belief was this, and it's not a false belief, that the law, the will of the sovereign, arises not from the minds of men, but from the land. From the land. The true understanding of that, the inerrant understanding of that, comes with the statement that Jesus Christ made to his learners. It's called the Lord's Prayer. Of course, it wasn't the Lord's Prayer at all. That's not in the Bible anywhere. It's the disciples' prayer, because the Lord himself, Jesus Christ, couldn't have intelligently prayed that prayer. He wouldn't have. He can't intelligently say, forgive us our sins or forgive us our debts. He has none. He's sinless. But he taught them to pray, and he said, thy kingdom come, thy will. Will of who? Will of the sovereign and the maker of heaven and earth. What is the will of the sovereign? It is law. Thy will be done on land as it is in the skies, on earth as it is in heaven. Well, that is the fundamental reality and the fundamental belief that, and the Bible teaches this, that the will of God is the law. It comes from the skies to the land, and it then arises from the land. It is the law of the land. And without the land, of course, everything in the Bible relates back to the land. The land is the fundamental covenant of God with mankind. And so our common law being the law of the land, arising from the land, we have overt declarations of that in our common law tradition. One of them is the free soil doctrine. The free soil doctrine, which was well recognized in England, said that any person whose foot touched the soil of this island, regardless of his former condition of servitude, as soon as his foot touched the soil, he was ipso facto forever free. That's called the free soil doctrine. His chains fall off, as it were, immediately. His bonds are loosened. That doctrine was applied in the Matson slave case in Charleston, Illinois, in 1842, Abe Lincoln argued for the slave owner in that case, amazingly, and he lost. He lost. It was a writ of habeas corpus for a woman and her four children who were black slaves who lived there, and had land on both sides of the river in Kentucky and Illinois. They said as soon as her foot touched the soil of the Illinois side of the Ohio River, she was free forever. Well, that became a big doctrine then in the border wars between Missouri and Kansas. Terribly bloody mess. But the free soil doctrine was the question. Would Kansas be under the free soil doctrine if Kansas came into the state or came into the Union as a state? So this whole thing about the law of the land, from where it arises, it comes from the maker of heaven and earth to the land. The land is given to us. He has given to us the land. Our loyalty is to the law of the land, not to people, to the land. We've lost that. And because we've lost that, we're adrift. We're without an anchor. We're becoming a people without a country. And that's what the evil empire wants. Listen, God gave land to Adam's race, and the Bible says he partitioned it and parceled it out to different tribes and tongues. We have ours. It's here. And if we're foolish enough to lose that understanding, we will lose our land. And if we lose our land, if it vomits us out, as the Bible puts it, then we are really in bad shape. Land is what anchors all men, has always anchored men, and we have, it's not everybody's land, it's our land as Americans, and then we get down to our states and our counties, and then we have particular parcels of real estate for which we are personally responsible. You say, I don't own any land. Well, where do you live? You live in a rented apartment? You're responsible. You have rights to real estate. Take care of it. Don't pollute it. You live under a bridge? Same thing. For some reason, God's allowing you to live on that little patch of dirt. I've known people that lived under bridges, and they took care of their little place. When I lived out in Arizona, I lived way out in the desert. There was a fellow lived under a bridge out there. He had a bachelor's degree and two master's degrees. For $20 a day, he'd do anything you wanted him to do. Well, I mean, within the law, he'd work. Whether you wanted to have your place swept out, or you wanted to have your garden tilled, or you wanted to have some gravel scooped, $20 a day, flat rate. Everybody liked him. He lived under the bridge. Nobody bothered him. That was his parcel of real estate by common consensus. Well, the point being, everybody's dependent upon land. Everybody lives someplace. Even if you live in a houseboat, you're tied up to land most of the time. You can't just be out on the open sea. The sea is not land. Land is what we have here in America. Our loyalty is to the law of the land. Our Constitution says it is the way things are to be done in our land. It's when it speaks, it doesn't speak about everything. But where it speaks, it is the way things are to be done. Well, I got a couple of minutes and I'm going to quit. I'd mentioned the oath. Only by faithfulness to our Constitution are the people, who are the people, the militia. I'm saying that in good company. That's what the founders said over and over again. Only by faithfulness to our Constitution are the people best served. A proper oath is a man's choice to additionally bind himself under penalty to a duty he has already recognized and accepted. An oath does not add any duty to anybody. The oath just additionally binds a man to a duty he already has. Thus, to swear an oath is to accept a curse in the event the promise sworn to is broken. Do we take that serious? What's the use of swearing or affirming, however you want to say it? What's the use if you're not serious enough to say, I accept the curse that comes if I don't give it my full effort? Now, there are those situations where, and this is a defense of common law, if it's utterly impossible to do what you've sworn to do, you could be exonerated. But that's why you have to be careful. You have to be what Jesus Christ said to be. Don't just swear generally. Be very careful, very tight about what you swear about. Our office holders of government, state and federal, our Constitution requires them to take this oath that they support and defend the Constitution. Listen. The Bible says that when you take an oath, the Lord will bind you to it. You will answer for it. This is not a small matter. The Westminster Confession puts it this way, says that the oath is a religious activity. Well, sure it is. You're calling God in to curse you if you don't follow through with your promise. The oath attaches to the promise. It supports the promise. It additionally binds a man to the promise with a scary commitment, a curse from God himself. And when done before witnesses, we call oath-taking a ceremony. All ceremonies, by the way, are oaths. All ceremonies are oaths. The Lord's Supper is an oath. Don't take it lightly. That's just one example. This is an oath. What the president swears, what the office holders swear. If you ever do that, be real careful. Think about what you're doing. Indeed, by the time a person decides to solemnize by oath his loyalty back to God in response to God's faithfulness to him, he has seen his duty. He's seen it. Yeah, you know what you're saying. Be careful. Ceremonial solemnizing, such as that referred to in this and other clauses of our Constitution, is meant to impress the swearer's duty deeper into his conscience. Moreover, if done before witnesses, it is their duty to hold the oath taker to his duty. In all events, every promise, commitment, and undertaking, whether or not formally sworn to, whether or not understood, is binding of oneself before God himself. It is the equivalent of the oath. I'll stop there. I want to make one mention, if I may, Gerard, and I figure Gerard's there by now. On the 28th of March, I've been challenged to a trial in Everton, Missouri. It's a trial, and the question before the court is, I'm arguing in defense of the Constitution of the United States, and the other fellow is arguing that the Constitution of the United States is unbiblical. It's unbiblical, and I'm arguing that it is. And we fashioned it a trial, and it's supposed to occur that evening. And if you go to commonlawyer.com, on the press on the events button, and it gives the details about this trial that we have scheduled. Lord willing, we'll be able to do it. I'm looking forward to it. We're preparing well for it. He had written the book, 550 some pages long, this other fella, showing that the Bible, the Constitution of the United States, is unbiblical at every point. Amazing effort he put out. I don't get it. So I'll be arguing the opposite. Well, again, thank you for allowing me a few minutes, and back to whoever's got the board there.
So is that a local court, a federal court? What's the?
Oh, it's not a no. We it's our own court. We set it up.
Oh, it's a
yeah.
It's a, right.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I didn't mean to mislead. And by the way, go ahead, Gerard.
No, and is it going to be like on a radio? I mean, can we tune into that?
I'm glad you brought that up. That was my next point I forgot to make. We're trying to fix it so we can live stream it on YouTube, but Everton's out in the Ozark Hills a little bit, and I don't know that the signal there is that good. So we're trying to figure out how to do that. But if we don't, I've lined up a professional videographer to video it, so that we can put it on YouTube, and that's our plan. We want to raise the consciousness, both of us. We want to raise the consciousness of people about the Constitution, and the Bible's one way to do it. Now, he really believes, though, that it's not biblical. I mean, this guy's convicted about it. Nice fella, as far as I know. He's just got convictions. He believes the Bible is the supreme law of the land. I believe that's a misunderstanding. Obviously, the Bible is greater than the Constitution. I'm not like the Mormons. You know, the Mormons believe the Constitution is on equal level with the Bible. No, that's not right. But the Constitution is a reliable document. That's my point. And it is consonant. My argument is, at every point, it's consonant with the Bible. I haven't found where it isn't. It supports the covenant of God. That's my approach to the whole thing. But yeah, and I'll keep you posted, and also have things that if anything changes, I'll put it on our website at commonlawyer.com. Thanks, Gerard.
Yeah, we could use that. I think we'll use it like War of the Worlds. We'll start playing it, and people think it's real, and we'll get it viral.
Well, you thought, the way I said it, see, I learned something. The way I said it, you thought it was real. Or in a real court.
I absolutely did. I said, how did he ever get such a case? How did they ever let a case into court? Because I don't think they want to do that. But
no,
that's a good idea.
They,
and if people hear that, maybe that's what it's going to take to get it into court.
Yeah, we're saying then, if anybody listens or watches, this is what I want to do, but I haven't got this clear planned out. I want it to be before the jury, and I want you folk to be the jury. And I want you to be able to register your understanding or your opinion or your verdict. I want you to register your verdict, if it's live on YouTube, soon afterward. That'd be my idea.
That would be really something. That would be great. And having it, you know, if you could bring it here, you got a bunch of people ready made for your jury.
No, I was thinking, but that maybe is the way to do it, to have a 12-man jury. I was thinking just the people at large that watch if they want to register their verdict. But maybe we should impanel the jury. We're still planning some things out. We've got the general idea in place. This fellow, by the way, Gerard, that is on the other side, he's a serious and a good student of the Bible and a good Bible teacher. I've listened to him. I've learned things from him. I think he's about a year younger than me, if I'm not mistaken. But he's a serious student of the Bible. He believes the Bible to be true. He deals with it and studies it hard. But I just believe his conclusion is wrong, and we're trying to settle stipulations right now. In other words, what do we both believe, so we won't rehash things out that we both agree on, and try to stick to one question. I presented the question this way. I think this is the question that we should focus on and stick to make it simple for us and everybody else. The question would be this: is the Bible an Antichrist document? Is the Constitution an Antichrist document? I'd heard him say that once, and I understood why he said it. Doesn't mean I agree with him. But
does he say any reasoning behind that, or what's his thinking?
Oh yeah, I say he's got a book that's 550 pages long and hardback bound copy that makes that argument. Yeah.
Yeah, because the only problem that I could really find in the Constitution was the slave issue, and they knew that was a problem. The good people knew. But other than that, I mean, look at the Constitution. When you really look at it, it's the law that we're giving to our government on how they may operate and proceed, and we give them, of course, restrictions through a Bill of Rights, through a Bill of Prohibitions, and also Article 1-9, Section 9, we have some prohibitions for them. We have some information for the states and what they can do and what they can't do. Not that much, but it's in there. And really, you know, and again, we have the unalienable right of government to have a government by consent. And so I think the problem with the slavery issue has been corrected. Of course, the enemy got a few words in there that don't belong there, and it's problematic. But there was a correction, you know, with what was it, the 14th and the 15th Amendment, I think it was, and the 13th Amendment. So the 13th, which actually should be part of the 14th or part of the 15th, because of the original 13th Amendment, which is another issue. But in any event, I think we've corrected that. As a nation, we do have a major sin in this nation that is rampant, and that the Supreme Court really stuck their fingers into God's business with Roe versus Wade. They didn't have the jurisdiction to make a decision of that kind of a case. That's a law case, not an equity case, and the people have exercised uncontrollable murder. And that's a sin, this nation. This is why I think we're going through the pains and sufferings we have been going through. But hopefully, you know, like God says, you know, if my people who are called by my name shall humble themselves, pray, and repent, that he will hear. And let me read it right here. I got it. 2 Chronicles 7:14. If my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and will forgive their sins and will heal their land. And, of course, that doesn't require everybody in the nation to do that, but it requires God's children to respond to this, and whatever that number may be, no one knows but God. And that's what will save and protect this nation, is God's children, because this nation is here to protect God's people, ultimately, just like the purpose of the nation of Israel was to protect the Israel itself, in other words, the body of Christ in Israel. And here we have the same thing in this nation, the protector of God's people, ultimately, because we have God's law courts, as corrupt as they are. Well, hopefully he's going to heal the nation.
I think God's people are those people that call themselves Christians. So how can a Christian believe in abortion?
Well, and you do have a lot of people that claim to be Christians and believe in abortion,
exactly.
Believe it or not.
So that's what he's saying. If those people got my people.
Well, we're talking about the body of Christ at this point, though. Not the corporate church, but the spiritual church, the true church of God.
But
that's collective, you know, that they were spread all over the world, and nobody has, we're not all in one corporate body anywhere.
When somebody asks you, and they say, what are you? And you say, I'm Christian.
That
means you believe in Christ.
Right.
So I would think that those are those people who call themselves by his name.
But there are people who claim and are not. They're the children of Satan and not of God. There's lots of people who mindlessly call themselves a Christian because they were told they were a Christian, but they haven't practiced Christianity. They don't know Christ. They haven't read his word. They don't know nothing. I mean, I remember when I was a child being raised up, and particularly in a Catholic environment, and there was very minimum Bible. But again, so we were really lacked knowledge, at least from my perspective, me as a person when I was younger, we lacked that knowledge. But nevertheless, a lot of people claim to be something they're not.
Right. Anyway.
But remember, I think the key word to that, let me look at this. Yeah, if my people, which are called by my name, okay, that's the key, his people.
Right.
Okay, Brent, are you done?
Yeah.
I just wrapped them up, asking them more questions.
Get a hold of Jan and try to work it out so you can control. You'll be able to control your mic on your own when you come in here, and this way you can pipe in. I don't know whether we're going to be able to keep you on. You're going to have to mute your mic from your end, but we'll try to keep you unmuted here on this end. If we hear anything coming from the background, we'll have to mute you. But other than that, we'll try to keep you open. I think we can. Jen, once we move to the next caller, which looks like we already are at Lee from, was that New Hampshire, I guess?
Yeah, but he's not in the box yet. I didn't click him yet.
Oh, okay. Well, once he gets clicked, Brent's going to be muted. Maybe you can unmute Brent and let's see if it sticks. Okay, Jen?
Okay, I'll try.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, we'll try to keep you unmuted here, Brent, if you want to pipe in.
Okay, thank you.
But you'll have to mute yourself on your phone end so we don't hear any of the whatever's going on around you.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to... Looks like Lee from New Hampshire. You've been unmuted. Go ahead, Lee.
All right, well, first off, I just wanted to thank your speaker there. That was really helpful to... put together the law of the land and due process and fair play. Just really helps to demystify the whole concept.
Yep. Yeah.
Now I'd heard someone was mentioning. So I've been studying Bill Thornton that you guys had recommended.
Yeah, Bill Thornton was one of the ones that we learned. You know, started in common law with. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's just absolutely phenomenal material. And I had two questions about other experts. So, first off, I was wondering if there was anyone else that you would recommend.
Well,
Michael Bodnarik.
Right.
Okay. And, you know, remember, we don't agree 100% with these people, but they're on the mark.
All right, they make sense. So.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the key mistakes that we believe that... Bill Thornton makes, okay, is he calls himself the king of the court. He's not the king of the court. The king of the court, in a true court of law, is God. God's the king of the court. And the jury, the 12 individuals sitting on that bench, they're there to represent that king. In other words, the law of God, ultimately the law of the land, a just court, which is controlled by maxims, ultimately. That's a major difference between what we're thinking here, our conclusions that we've come to here, and what in opposition to his conclusions. I know when I first listened to him, I was in agreement with him because I was learning, but as I took it and judged it up against other things I was learning, and you're always learning something, and you're always finding an error, and you're always making corrections. You know, you come to realize that certain things are wrong, and you just fix them and continue on,
Well, and fortunately, that's, it, It doesn't make a practical difference as far as once you're in the court, whether you're the representative of the king or the king itself. I mean, either way, you end up with the same sovereign authority.
Well, you control the court to some degree when you go into the court. If the court is doesn't have the jurisdiction, it's running under equity and so on and so forth, you know, then you, to some degree you can take control and expect the court to be obedient. But they're not going to be because they're evil. Generally speaking, you know, the tribunal is the decision maker of the court. They're representing the king of the court, that tribunal. Now, it is true that if you decide to allow a judge to make a decision on your case, for instance, it's a contract, a dispute or something like that, and you want to get it through, and you can say, well, okay, I'll go. If the judge is just, you know, if we have a just system and just judges, then we can exercise that to move things along a lot quicker. But that also provides for the opportunity for appeal, because they could make a mistake. When it comes to a court of law, where the juries decide, there is no appeal from that. Their decision is final, period. The only decision or correction the United States Supreme Court could make, or the appellate court, is only in the case of a violation of someone's unalienable right during that process. If they injured someone's right, an unalienable right, then the Supreme Court has the authority to correct that and protect that individual who was violated by that particular tribunal if that were to happen. And so that's kind of a safety thing. They also, when you're in a court and a court isn't obedient and you move to federal court for cause, it's always that cause is a constitutional issue, usually a Bill of Rights issue, some unalienable right, and they have a duty to protect your unalienable right. You can expect them to rule your way. You know, when they rule against you, when you're asking them to protect your unalienable right, you know, you're moving the court to get that protection. And when they fail protecting you, then they betrayed you. And that's happening all day long these days, unfortunately. And this is all because of Rule 2, Federal Rule 2, which took equity and law and combined them together and called it civil law. And that is the problem. And you cannot combine a court, and you can't combine statutes and the laws of God. You can't combine equity and law. It's just not possible. It's water and oil. It's not going to mix. But that is the problem.
So Rule 2 there, where could I find that? You've mentioned that before, but I'm not quite sure where to look.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you, the best thing to do is you go, and we have a paper done on this. Let me think. Rules? No, that's not it. Law and Equity, I think it was last week we did it, was it? Let me see. I think we covered Rule 2 in there. With the paper we're working on, we're going to be talking about Rule 2 also, because this is the major problem of the court. It is subversion against the United States of America. It's subversion against the Constitution and we the people. You know, these people, and the United States Supreme Court has to understand this, and also the federal district courts understand this, all those judges, they got to. There's no way that they could be ignorant to these facts. But nevertheless, they continue down that road, and that's the problem we have. But Rule 2, I know I've done a paper on that, I'm looking for it right now, but you can find this information, what the United States Supreme Court thinks about this, on a website that is sponsored by them that talks about this combination, combining law and equity together. And let me see if I can find that real quickly. Well, I'll tell you what, let's continue to...
Rule 2 or...?
Oh, yeah, it's the rules of the court, and it's Rule 2, Federal Rules of the Court. And we have a copy of all those rules up on our website. But I wanted to really give you a website where you can go, where the United States Supreme Court actually is sponsored. Well, a website that's sponsored by them, where they make statement to that common law and equity has been combined together.
It's their apologetics of it, basically.
So, but I'll look for that. When I see it, I'll pipe in. I'll just try to squeeze it in, and I'll let it be known. So you can continue with your call. I'll continue right. looking.
All right. So also, I was wondering if anyone had heard of Dean Clifford, because he was the only one before running across you guys who seemed to make any kind of sense with this stuff.
Dean Clifford, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a little bit different. I know he's up in Canada, so I know some of that stuff's a little different. But
he's not the guy they put in jail.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, I know his story. I was following it for a while. I noticed recently something just came up recently with him, and they did not let him go.
Yeah,
right? Didn't he have some kind of hearing? He's been in jail for, I don't know, 5-7 years or some ridiculous amount.
Yeah, really. Been a while.
Well, he scared them because he got a following, and he was making sense, and they didn't like that. You know what I mean? He was organizing people, and they considered him dangerous, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, they probably
turned him into a political prisoner now.
Right. They probably keep him away from the other prisoners, too. They can't have him educating the prisoners either, you know? Next thing you know, you'll have an uprising. But he was a young guy, too. And he was, he was pretty dynamic, and it's a shame he's in jail. I mean, he's in Canada, right?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, that's too bad. I don't know. You know, I mean, I know that he's got a lot of people trying to support him and raise money for him, but, you know, and Canada's tough. Canada's horrible in a lot of respects. Everybody thinks Canada's so free. Well, they think America's free, and we know we're not, you know. So...
Right, okay. I did find this thing, and I'll give you just a little information on it. The paper we're going to be doing this week, and we're probably going to be reading it next week, as long as it's not too long. We may have to break it up into two parts if it is, but it'll be posted next week once we file it, because we're looking to file this paper with the court this week, hopefully. But this is basically, I'm going to read a little bit what I have in the paper here, and then I'll give you a website. It's the Federal Judicial Center. FJC.gov. But anyway, it says, I've written here, defendants concealed unnatural law courts under Federal Rule 2 in violation of 18 U.S.C. Subsection 1001. According to the Federal Judicial Center, a government agency that on September 16, 1938, pursuant to its fictional authority under the Repugnant Rules Enabling Act of 1934, and they state this: the Supreme Court enacted uniform rules of procedure for the federal courts under the new rules. Suits in equity and suits at common law were grouped together under the term civil action, claiming that rigid application of common law rules brought about injustice. That was their reasoning, so they claim. So they abrogated the law of the land. It's no longer there. That's why when we go into courts, we pay them the $310 or the $400 on the federal level, whatever it is they want. They're constant asking for money. And they bring all these statutes in, and they bring the codes, USC 18 against us. Now, USC 26 is a very interesting one. We'll be talking a little bit about that also in this paper. But this is an act of treason. The United States Supreme Court, the Congress, both houses, under the teaching of the American Bar Association, put this together and just abrogated the common law. Actually, they got rid of the Constitution at that point. That's why they say some strange things. I've heard this mentioned numerous times. I haven't seen it written, but, the Supreme Court, they don't want to hear anything before a certain year, whatever that's about, I don't know. But that probably has to do with this in 1934, because a major change was changed in 1938. This major change took place. And it's interesting because a big event happened after 1938, didn't it? World War II. And it always takes some big event to happen so that they can make this major change. And no one seems to have noticed. Even today, people just don't seem to notice this huge change in things that are destructive to who we are as a people and what our heritage is. Our nation has been, trodden underfoot. Our Constitution has been trodden underfoot by the people that we have entrusted to support and defend it. And that's our position. These people, you know, need to pay the toll for that.
Hey, isn't it funny when we went in the New York courts and we were first going around trying to get our court, that Gail Prudente said the common law has been abrogated. She understands, though, right?
They have true believers.
Yeah, the common law was abrogated.
You see, that's why the original 13th Amendment, which was put out there, I believe, in 1819, our founding fathers, a lot of our founding fathers, of course, were still alive then. And they put the 13th Amendment here in there, which we do have a... You can go read the original 13th Amendment and look at some information concerning the 13th Amendment on our website. I'll try to pipe that in a minute. But what they did... well, let me see if I can find this real quick. That should be... Matter of fact, you go to Action Against the Judiciary under the Grand Jury tab. If you go there and you come down... quite a bit, you come down to where we have evidence. And some of the evidence we have, yeah, the 16th Amendment was not ratified, 17th Amendment was not ratified. The original 13th Amendment is in here somewhere. I think maybe it was under a memorandum. Let me go back up. We did a memorandum possibly on the 13th Amendment and put the evidence inside that memorandum, which has the original, of course. Yeah, you'll find a memorandum towards the top of the page. You'll see memorandums, joiners, and habeas corpuses. And you'll see the memorandum for Amendment 13, okay? And it should be in here, the article. Okay, the article of amendment ratification in 1819, okay? And which just disappeared in 1876, added an enforceable strict penalty, i.e., inability to hold office and loss of citizenship for the violation of the already existing constitutional prohibition in Article 1, Section 9, Clause 8 on titles of nobility and other conflicts of citizenship interests, such as accepting emoluments of any kind for services or favor, just like Biden did with his son, rendered
now,
rendered.
Is that the one where you aren't supposed to have foreign titles?
Well, yeah. You see, back then, you know, we didn't have the American Bar Association, but we had the British Bar.
That's just what I was going to ask, is if that counted as a foreign title if you're a lawyer.
Well, we had British Bar members, okay, and they were subverting our Constitution, and this is why our founding fathers did this. And they had titles of nobility, okay. Now, they still have these titles, but they really don't mean much. You know, it doesn't give them anything special, but they call themselves Esquire. It's not so much in the title as it is in the mindset, the teaching. You see, the American Bar Association and many other associations connected with them, they are the ones responsible for teaching and destroying the law of the land, the Constitution, because they're the ones that have been teaching our judges and teaching the lawyers and all these people in law. And the ones that have woken up to it and see and realize what's going on, they're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, because if they speak up, they may end up not being around the next day, you know? And so... it's a problem, and it's not so much of the title, okay? It worked fine for them back then. They didn't want any British bar lawyers. They didn't want those lawyers in their courtrooms, and most importantly, they didn't want them elected into positions, particularly like legislators. They didn't want them in those positions because they were going to bring in the poison that they believed, that they were taught and probably all believed, they're the minions of the New World Order. But the Bar Association today in America, again, they're the minions of the New World Order. Not that all bar lawyers are bad or anything. Some of them have woken up. We recently met one a couple of months ago, that Gerard and I sat down with one who has woken up. And there are other lawyers that really don't consider themselves, I understand, bar lawyers in the sense that they went to schools that were not necessarily bar taught, but they still take the bar exam, so they kind of understand the general knowledge that they do want them to have. I don't know how much poison is in those exams. I'm sure there is some. But again, the bottom line is that they didn't want these people... to be any way, you know, involved in our lawmaking abilities, legislating in the states and especially in the federal government. And so that's how they solved that problem, to keep them out of power or, you know, authority. But nevertheless, the American Bar Association picked it right up, and they're in there. They got it. They teach that common law has been abrogated. That's what they teach. Almost I've met very few lawyers who realize that it hasn't been, but it's just that they say it is, and they believe it is, and the people aren't educated enough to realize anything. So we have to live with this major problem in the court. Unless the people get educated and do something about it.
Isn't there something rather specific about not abrogating our rights?
Yeah, they put a clause in there, and they said, except where it would abrogate the Constitution. You know, they always put a weasel clause to make it sound constitutional.
Yeah, but that was a nod, a wink, and a handshake.
Yeah,
that's
right.
The problem with that, because the conspiracy falls in both houses, not only the two houses, or, you know, the Congress, but also in the courthouse. It falls in both houses. There's a wink, a nod, and a handshake. A lot of things are done in Congress that Congress may not want. A lot of people may not want to go through. But again, they're stuck between a rock and a hard place, and they may not be around tomorrow if they don't comply. We understand that, and that's why we give the olive branch. At some point, the olive branch is going away. We will, and we plan on probably having to indict some of these Supreme Court judges. When the time comes that it's time for them to stand with the people, and that time is coming close, and we'll know when it happens, if they don't stand with the people, we are going to consider an indictment. I can't say we're going to get one, because we have to pull the people together and see if we get an indictment. And I'm pretty confident we probably will. And we'll indict these judges for subversion and treason. And we'll expect the maximum penalty of the law. Of course, that's up to the trial jury to decide that. Okay, we can't make that decision. But the trial jury will be risen up to make that decision, whatever they think the penalty should be. But we will pursue that when necessary. Until that time comes, which again I think is very close, we have that olive branch out there.
All right, well, if you wouldn't mind, I actually had 2 cents since you had brought up the legal matter of abortion.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just to you know, give a contrary point of view, there are, in fact, Christians that consider it acceptable because the matter of when a human becomes a human being, you know. In Genesis, it was when God breathed into Adam that he became a living soul, and in the legal treatises of the Old Testament, they did have a different penalty from killing someone versus causing a woman to lose her child.
Yeah, well, that may be logical in certain senses. Let's leave the problem with abortion and maybe killing the mother and so on. We'll leave that aside for now. But let's look. If you go into the Bible and you dig down deep, you'll discover that God speaks of people that haven't been born yet, particularly moving when Israel went into Egypt. God speaks of four individuals. And if you're not paying attention and really understanding the chronology of what's going on, you wouldn't realize that these people have not been born yet. And the last person that he spoke of came out on the other side 400 years later. So God is already speaking of that. He speaks of being, you know, with him before the world was. I mean, we're already in the mind of God. So his will, once inception takes place, once an individual is in the womb, and that egg divides, at that point in time, we have to consider at inception that the soul enters. We don't know one way or the other, so that child is innocent until proven not a life. It's a life until. That's just a logical, that's right there is a maxim, okay? The child is alive until you can prove that it's not. Well, the child is a soul, a living soul, until you can prove that it's not. God even got angry with the practicing of birth control. But in any event, You know, you can't make a decision for an abortion in any way until you can prove that it's not a living soul, and that'll never happen. But as far as the Bible is concerned and the way God speaks, it's as if that child is that person is here, and it just hasn't been born. That person hasn't been born yet. Now, look at the decision of an abortion. If someone has an abortion, okay, the decision of that abortion needs to be made in a court of law if charges are brought up. And people may think different ways. We leave that up to the people, those 12 individuals. But generally, it's murder, no matter how you put it. You know, what was the purpose of the abortion? And, of course, the individual performing the abortion would be really, in my opinion, and I don't know that I'm right on this, but I think in my opinion, they'd be the bigger, you know, they'd be actually the murderer. Of course, the mother would be participating in this, but then there are other extenuating circumstances that may need to be considered. I know when my wife was pregnant with one of our children, I mean, she was going crazy, you know. I forget what it's called. Anyway, you know, she just wasn't thinking right. She was angry a lot and everything else. But it was just, you know, a process that she was going through during that time of pregnancy. So, again, all those cases would be individual. I'm not going to try to make a decision one way or another.
Yeah, that's
any of those
something
things
to be decided in court.
That
yeah,
my point is that it belongs to those 12 people sitting in court. They're the ones that take a vow to God to come with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy, and they're the ones that got to decide, and no one can second-guess that. But no judge should ever be able to decide anything like that. The United States Supreme Court is a court of equity, not a court of law. And it's not part of that process. Although they act as a court of law when, in certain cases, of course, you know, United States Code Title 18 brings that into play, and they may act in the sense of a court of law. But that's for people who are in the government. That's where all of that, you know, title codes and statutes and all these titles, therefore, people who work for the government, elected individuals, appointed individuals, the bureaucrats. It's not for us. It has nothing to do with us.
Mm-hmm. Yep. My point there was mostly just that a person can, in fact, be a Christian and differ in opinion on that.
Of course. Again, every case is on its own. I don't know the answers to some of these cases. I'm sure there are cases when, you know, something is fine. But again, it's not for me to decide. I can't think of one, but that doesn't mean there isn't one. You have to hear the case and really work, you know, in your heart to figure this out.
Well, in Roe versus Wade, they put language in that said, with our knowledge, the technology and the knowledge we have today, we don't know exactly when life starts. But if this information may have to be revisited as our technology gets better. Well, since that time, they have gone inside the womb and they have photographed and cataloged and looked at and understood what DNA is, how it, you know, when it comes together, what chemicals come, and they actually found that when the sperm enters the egg and that union is made, there's an actual spark that comes out. And I believe that that's the soul going in at the moment of conception. And to think that Christ would rip a union that is done like that with DNA that's going to determine a personality, its idiosyncrasies, its smallest characters from the beginning, that would be okay to destroy that. It's just it doesn't go with the other Christian beliefs. It just doesn't make sense. I mean, do what Jesus would do. You think Jesus would be an abortionist? You think that he would rip that life out of the womb of a mother, the safest place that should be in the world? I mean, that's my opinion, and yet science is bearing it out at this point. That's what I think.
Well, once inception takes place, an action has taken place, and the first thing, it's already working towards the dividing of a cell. That's life. Okay, that's life. And in this case, it's human life.
Well, the argument is that, you know, they go through, is it a zygote, is it, a, you know, is that bioplast?
It basically comes down to a question of whether it's its own individual or if it's part of the mother.
Well, here's the key thing to that. When we go into the Bible, the Lord says that he opens the womb and he closes the womb. So once, and that, of course, is concerning the birth of a child. And at that point in time, it's a living soul. As far as I'm concerned, it seems that God is saying that. He opens and closes it. It is a life.
All right.
I don't know any other way to see it. I mean, you know.
But you see, we know more when life starts now than we did when Roe versus Wade. That's my point.
Yeah, but the point of Roe versus Wade is that that was not their jurisdiction, though. That's the problem.
I understand, but this was something they put another caveat, another weasel clause. But they said, look, science proves the Bible out every day more and more. That's my point. We have knowledge today that we didn't have back then. That has really narrowed the understanding of when life begins, because we understand what that code is and what that code says and what it does when it actually takes effect at the moment of conception. And these things are written in stone. It's like a thunderclap, bam, and that person is now conceived. And even its habits and its idiosyncrasies are already there. And you're going to pull it out and say, well, it's part of the mother. Look at it. It's part of the mother. It's part that she should protect, not pull out. And why is she pulling it out in the first place? I mean, if she can't afford a child, there's other people that would love that child. She could put it up for adoption. There's lots of other
adoption is certainly an unsung heroism, I think.
Exactly.
I mean, that is...
if you got a mother on the table and she's pregnant and it's a car accident and they're trying to save the mother and the baby, that's a different story. That's a judgment call that only the doctor can make. You know what I mean? And it might even be the mother's wishes: save my baby, don't save me. You see what I'm saying? We can't get in the middle of that. You know what I'm saying? But a lot of it is selfishness and ignorance to people. You know. People are brought up in a way, we're brainwashed, and we've been desensitized also. That's another problem.
That is definitely a problem.
They desensitize us. But look, we got to get moving on. We got other people.
Yeah, just one real quick thing. The paper that you discussed last week, I was wondering where I could find that.
Yeah, if you go to our site, National Liberty Alliance, okay.org, go to education, highlight education, and the bottom of that drop-down box you'll see weekly topics. You click on that, and you will find all the papers that we've been writing and reading on that page. You'll see the date with it also, so you can, if you want, you can go over to our weekly call and get the MP3 and download or listen to that through your browser. And read along with it, and you can rewind and so on and so forth, or just read the papers, you know, either one. These papers are an education, you know, and they're pieces. You know, we got law and equity, which we discussed last week. We looked at the Declaration of Independence a little bit the week before. Government by consent was another topic, plan to save the Republic. I mean, each one of these is an education. This is part of what we need to know and understand. And again, you know, we don't have to remember all these things. We don't have to be able to articulate all these things. But you fill your mind with these things, you know, you'll be able to recall and become a better person because you're looking at the truth. And of course, the more time you spend with it, the more it kind of sticks to you, and you're able to maybe start to articulate these things and so on. But we should know these things at bare minimum. We should be taught these things, and we need to teach our children in school these things.
All right. Well, thank you very much, and thank you for your work. God bless.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
You turn.
Okay. Brett from Wisconsin, you've been unmuted.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah, hello.
Hi. Yeah, I'm Brett from Wisconsin. I was on the call last week. I was having some frustration with a jurisdictional challenge.
Yeah, I remember somewhat. Yep.
Yeah, I had the case today and got it rescheduled again, but I'm told it's mandatory to bring my 12-year-old in, otherwise face a default.
And who's going to face
default? What defaults?
Yeah, in other words, they're subpoenaing him to bring the child.
Yeah, I remember the case, but I mean, what did they tell you?
He would be
that I would have to bring my child in the next time, otherwise it will be a default, a conviction, and it
really?
Would be all.
You need to get yourself a lawyer real quick. I mean, I never really say that often, but let me tell you, have you spoke with a lawyer about this?
I spoke with an attorney today. They told me they couldn't get involved because...
Really? Why don't you go down and talk to your sheriff? What is this? What kind of court is this? Is this a town court, city court, village court, state court? What is it?
It's a municipal court.
A municipal court. Why don't you go talk to your sheriff? You have a right to remain silent. Your child has a right to remain silent. And you, that child is not old enough to be able to make any decisions on their own, to speak about anything. They're easily swayed to this way or that way. Their memory maybe not be good. There's a lot of... No, that child should never speak. You need to tell your child that they're ever brought into that court that, that you know, they need to be just say silent. I have a right to be silent. Okay? And that's what you have to be. But I would go talk to your sheriff. I would be down to my sheriff. Right now at that point. But what you just told me, I'd go down to my sheriff and say, I want your protection. What are you going to do for me here?
How old is this child? Is it under
12.
16? 12. Oh, 12. That's ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous. They're protected from that. Why do you think the mobsters use children to run drugs? Because they can't arrest them. They're not held responsible.
Have you talked with Jim about having us do a paper for you or something?
No, I did print out the jurisdictional challenge, but I still
look.
Wasn't.
You know, if you don't have the knowledge and all these, that stuff is there for people who have the knowledge. And some people think that they have enough knowledge, and they don't, to be able to really, you know, make these cases because you're going into the lion's den. You know, let me tell you, and not many people survive the lion's den, but that's what you're going into.
I don't understand why the lawyers would tell them they can't get involved.
Because
what's that about?
Yeah, they're
ignorant. If it was actively litigated, they can't get involved.
You need to go see the sheriff, see where that'll take you. You should talk to Jim and consider us doing a paper for you, and maybe that might help.
First of all, how do you actively litigate something that a plea has never been put in yet? What's actively litigated? What do they call an actively litigated? Nobody's given consent to this.
The point is that child. Look at that. You could speak up for that child. We have a right to be silent. My child is not going to speak. You know, even if a cop tries to question a child, they can't do it without the parent there. I mean, who the heck does this judge think they are? Of course, they probably went to judge school and have no legal background to begin with anyway, has no clue of who we are as a people and what the Constitution is. I haven't met a town judge that has any clue on any of these things, you know? And they all depend on whatever prosecutor that they have in the court, some lawyer that's really working the cases, and they rely on them. They go whatever way that lawyer says to go, that judge usually goes, because most of them have no experience at all of any of these things.
Well, the judge told me that if she pled guilty, then she could do this, participate in this program called Restorative Justice.
You haven't even had
a trial yet. He's already working out her thing, and
because everyone's guilty in those courts. No one walks out of there innocent. It is a rare bird for anyone to walk out of the municipality courts innocent. Everybody pays the toll. Everybody pays the ticket. Everybody gets the fine. Everybody goes to jail. It's just the way it is. There is no justice, no due process. You know what you do? Move it into federal court for cause.
That's a good advice right there. You know what? I tell him the child moved out of state. You're going to extradite her.
We have a paper up there that talks about moving to federal court for cause. You can go probably make your case before a judge, a federal judge, pretty easy. And you don't need to know law or anything in this. You just need to write the right words on the paper to get into that court. Once you get into the court, you say, Your Honor, it's just simple. My child has a right to be silent and not have to speak, okay, and not incriminate themselves. And by the way, that child is 12 years old. I'm the responsible party on top of that. You know, you don't come to my, this court should not be forcing my child to say anything or do anything or participate with anything.
Yeah, because I'd never heard of a mandatory bring your child in.
Well, they've already decided that she's guilty.
Hey, Brent, do you got anything to pipe in on this?
I'd bring a mannequin in, and I say, "This is my child. She's silent today."
Yeah.
Because I've instructed my child not to talk because I'm working in her best interest. So
Brent just opened up his mic. Maybe he's got an idea or a thought for this person.
No, I don't think you can hear me.
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Oh, you can hear me.
We can hear
you.
I
didn't quite. Oh, the talk. What exactly is the question? Maybe I missed it.
Okay, yeah. This is part of last week, and so we kind of have a little bit of background. Give them a quick background on this, Brett.
Okay.
This is Brent you're talking to. Brett is also very close to Brent, but Brett is talking. Go ahead, Brett.
Okay. Yeah, one weekend I was police officer came by and handed me a citation for my daughter for disorderly conduct and told me that I had to mandatory for me to appear at the court date. So I go to the court date without my daughter, and they told me I needed to bring my daughter, and they rescheduled it up to today. And so I went in there again, this time without my daughter. They told me it was mandatory that I bring my daughter in to plead guilty or not guilty or no contest.
Unbelievable. I'm getting sick listening to this, but go ahead.
How old is your daughter?
12 years old.
Okay.
I mean, I've questioned the officer the last hearing. That the first hearing that I went to and spoke to the judge, I was inquiring, asking, well, what is the nature of the cause? Who is bringing this action? They couldn't tell me anything. And so they told me the incident happened at the school. I went to the school, and so the school doesn't have any issues because I guess it was after school hours, but they don't have any part in it. And yet they don't have any record of any issues of my daughter being disorderly in any kind of way with anyone. Especially
What does your daughter say? Has she told you the story of what happened?
Yeah. The story is, and the school principal concurred as well, that they get along. Before and still to this day, that there has been no issues with them on record at all.
You mean the other child, you mean, and your daughter? There was an issue between two children, I presume, right?
Yeah, that's...
I mean, look, issues happen every day between children. I got into fights. You don't go to court because a 12-year-old gets into a fight. You get disciplined by your parents in the school, and you work it out. What the heck does the police have? You know what? I'd go suing that cop to begin with, and I'd sue that judge. And, you know, and that's hard to do because, you know, you're going up against the bureaucracy. You're going up against the powers that be, so to speak. And of course... You know, of course, your money with a lawyer. I wouldn't go in with a lawyer, of course, but obviously you don't have the ability at this point yet to be able to go into a court to make your argument and file the papers and deal with these issues because you don't know how things really work, so it's going to be very difficult for you. But this is really, really annoying to me.
Hey, Brian.
Yeah.
The judge told him this last time he went in. He said if your daughter comes in and pleads guilty, she can participate in this deferred justice program, you know, I don't know what it is.
Community. So they're going to find her guilty, is what they're going to do.
Yeah, so he's already got his mind made up on this thing. But anyway, we kind of wanted to get your opinion of what he should do.
I'm in the main thinking Brett, is that it? Yeah.
Brett, B-R-E-T.
If it were my daughter, you know, you look at a situation like this and you say, where in the law would this come from? That you are required to drag your daughter into a court at the behest of a police officer. You have a duty to protect your daughter. I don't know the whole story, and I don't want you to tell me the whole story because there's things that are between you and your daughter that are nobody's business but you and your daughter.
And if she confides in you, you are her protector. They are not her protector. It sounds to me like, from what I hear, that they're trying to promote a new program, and they need somebody in it so they can ask for more money, so they can hire more people. That's what I've seen that kind of thing before. But one thing for sure, if I had, well, I do have daughters. I wouldn't drag them in front of that kind of a thing. Those
absolutely
kind of people.
Absolutely not. Yeah, the damage too. The child is too young. It's look at this is an issue between the parents and the school and anybody else who is part of the process that is. Taking care of your child. I mean, and it may be between two parents if necessary, but certainly not the police. I mean, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, and then say that she has the power to plead. Well, what in the law would ever require you to drag your minor daughter into a court? That's another question. Is there some principle in law that requires that? This looks real suspicious. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, go talk. I'll tell you what. Go talk to your sheriff. See if you got a sheriff that has a couple of pennies, 2 cents in his brain or something that could say, yeah, you're right. I'll go to court with you. You don't have to bring your court there. He should go and chastise that cop and find out what the heck is he doing. And he should go to court with you and tell that judge this person has the right to remain silent on behalf of his daughter, and that's what he's doing right here. And stop the nonsense.
And don't take your daughter to the sheriff's office. No telling what he might do.
Right, right.
Because
you don't know if the guy has any brains or not, or woman. You don't really know. But I'd go tell the story to the sheriff and see what that sheriff might be able to do for you to help you out. Meanwhile, when's the next day for court?
The 13th of January.
Okay. Look, why don't you talk to Jim, work some paperwork out, and we'll send an amicus curiae in on your behalf. All right? Now, we ask for a donation, but if you can't afford a donation, that's fine. We'll do this case, We'll do any case even without it, but of course we do ask for a donation. But get a hold of Jim, intake at nationallibertyalliance.org. Go and fill out the application. Do you know where to fill out the form?
I'm not sure.
Okay, well, if you go to our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, and you click on Abusive Court, all right, and you follow down through that, you read through that page, and then you'll have the option, click here to fill out the form for a joinder, okay? That's what you want to do. And what we'll do is we'll do an amicus curiae on your behalf to the court, and you and I will get together a little bit so I can get more details, not necessarily of the case or what happened, but just some more details so we can write a paper specifically for this case. Who do these people think that they can pull a 12-year-old into a court and some cop to play this game, put them into a program, give them a record and all this other crap? Who do they think they are? This is a disciplinary. if your child was wrong in doing whatever it was that the child did, so you discipline the child. Children do things wrong all the time. I've punched people in the face. I've got punched in the face when I was a kid. No cops ever came to drag me into court. That's ridiculous. Children do stupid things. Well, so do adults, too.
Am I wrong for feeling any anxiety behind it?
Oh, not at all. I'd be angry myself and anxious about it, too. So, no, not at all.
Because the attorney, he couldn't tell me much. Again, I asked him, well, what jurisdiction was this operating under? He's like, it's an ordinance violation.
What ordinance? Did they tell you the ordinance? They don't even tell you what. You can't even face your accuser here on behalf of your daughter. What is this?
Right. Who's a sworn affidavit out? The cop or the other kid? Or I mean, who's making the complaint? The cop is making the complaint? And does he have first-hand knowledge?
Right. Just the police statement. And I have that. And that statement was written. He gave me the citation before he even spoke to my daughter. And then he wrote the report out as if he had spoke to my daughter before writing the citation. But he gave me the citation before he even saw my daughter. So he had it already in his mind that he was given a citation.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, but based on what? Did he witness the incident, or did somebody fill out a complaint and sign it. He's got a citation, but it has to come from somewhere. Either
right,
he witnessed it.
You need to go down.
Made a complaint.
Go down to the clerk. Go down to the clerk, and ask for a complete copy of the case, every paper in there. And if they say you can't have it, demand it. And if they still refuse to give it to you, you don't want to make a big argument with it. But again, get in touch with us, talk to Jim, and we'll try to work something out on our end. But this is so ridiculous; it's sickening, is what it is. 12-year-old going into being pulled into court over what did you say? Not a code. What was it? An ordinance? I mean,
ordinance.
An ordinance. Not even a statute. It's not even law.
Disorderly conduct.
Children are disorderly all the time. Yeah. These people are crazy.
According to the report that the police report, it was a phone call. So, from the parent, I guess, of the other child, that they got a phone call.
Mm-hmm.
No, but again, this was a day after.
Children do stupid things. We don't take them to court and give them records and put them on probation or some stupid program for it. We don't do that. We discipline our children ourselves. It's not for the court. It's not for government. It's not for any of those people to discipline our children. She didn't commit a crime.
Look, it's a minor child. I mean, it's a minor child. So what? It's a phone call. You tell them sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never harm me. Forget about it. It's name call. It's something she said over the phone. It can't even be a threat, that big of a threat, because you're not there in her face. It's ridiculous.
So the clerk, would it be city clerk or the county clerk? What level should I be?
No, you go to the court clerk. Right, dude. It's a municipal court. They have it in a municipal building, I'm sure. There, and just go in there and see the clerk of the court, clerk.
Where you went to court.
Yeah, and ask for the records. You want a complete copy of everything. You have a right to see the charges, who made those charges, all the evidence in that case. After all, Judge, you know, you want me to bring my daughter in here so she can plead guilty, but she's not going to plead guilty and she's not going to plead anything because we don't submit. But nevertheless, you want her in here for what? We don't even know what the charges are. You're not telling me. What, are you going to tell my 12-year-old daughter like she's going to be able to comprehend what you're talking about? And the consequences that you think that you can apply here, I'll tell you, I'd be ballistic in that place. And you got to stay calm though. Don't get excited like me. Stay calm.
You got to tell them that you're your daughter's representation. They're gonna say, "Oh, you can't represent her." Yes, I can, because I am her parent.
That's right. God gave them to me; didn't give them to the government.
That's right. So, and they have to give you all the paperwork just like you're an attorney. See, they don't want to deal with you. They don't want to talk to you because they want to talk to the attorney.
I think Brent hit the nail on the head. I think they're trying to get some new program going so they can make some money. Yeah, it's another money thing. They can get ordinance. Just think of all the kids they can pull in on this. I mean, this is a gold mine. Just go to a schoolyard and watch for a while. You'll be able to pull a whole bunch of them. Watch them leave the school. But you'd be arresting children all over the place.
I wonder how much kickback money the judge gets for putting people, sentencing them under that program. I bet you follow the money, you'll find out that he makes money on this too. Because that's the kind of stuff that goes on today.
Anyway, look at the page, think about this, see if you want us to assist you in some way. We'll write an amicus curiae on your behalf in this case. We'll let them know first. You know, look, they don't have jurisdiction over your daughter or you anyway. Okay, you're on the municipal court. What state are you in?
Wisconsin.
Anyway, they don't have authority over you. They don't have jurisdiction over you. An ordinance? Yeah. I'd like to know, get more information about this program, too. You know, when you go talk to them as if you're going to cooperate, but you need to understand what's going on. You know, tell them you're looking for counseling, and you're trying to gather all the information so you can make sure you get counseling in time for this next court hearing. And counseling doesn't mean it's a lawyer, and counseling doesn't mean you're going to be represented by a lawyer. We're counseling you, or others may counsel you, you know, but start collect all the information. And anything you can say that might lead them to think that you're playing ball with them, you should kind of throw it in as much as you can. Because once they see resistance from you, they're going to clam up. and they're going to violate your rights even more, because who do you think you are to come into this place and deny the information that we're telling you you need to give? That's their attitude. They're the boss, and we're the servant, and they're the master. That's what they think. Boy, we need to take control of this nation. And anybody listening to this call, if you haven't become a committee man yet, you haven't signed up to become a committee man, get out there and sign up, and potentially become an administrator if you're looking for a job for the juries. Because we need the people to take control of this and stop this nonsense. This would never happen if the people had control of the courts. They'd get a call from the local administrators of the grand jury trying to find out what the heck is going on and who these people think they are, you know. But we don't have that set up yet. We need to do this. Perfect example. It's only going to get worse.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, I would like some assistance with this. I would like for it to go away. I'm trying to protect my daughter.
Yeah, fill out the form, get a hold of Jim, you know. In order to go through the process, it's a $5 donation, you know, monthly donation for, you know, what's that, $60 a year. You know, so.
Okay. Is that in addition to current donation?
I'm sorry?
No. If you're given the $5 a month, you have access to that information. It's not in addition to, I don't believe.
Right. No, you get access to all of our information, and then if we do paperwork for you, we ask for a donation of $100 or more. But we have people who don't have money, and we do it anyway. So we will take on your case one way or the other.
Okay.
And again, it's not that, we're not going to promise you success, be in mind. But we're going to give you a paper, and we're going to lay out the law to them. And, you know, from here, we will take it to move it into our court, and they, you know, they will probably, again, we don't know how they're going to respond to that. And if that becomes a problem, then you're going to have to move it into federal court for cause, because we're not going to get justice in a lot of these cases until after the deep state is out. But in any event, we'll show you how to move it into federal court. And when you get into federal court, it's just about the facts. You only have to tell them the facts. These people are violating my right of due process. First of all, they don't have jurisdiction, okay? And they don't, okay? They don't have jurisdiction to hear these kind of cases. And the other thing is that you have the right of due process. And a 12-year-old, you know, what are they going to do, scour the schoolyards looking for potential money, you know, by picking up children that are arguing or whatever it is that they're doing? I mean, I don't know. So, anyway.
Well, okay. We have to move on now. It's getting
thank
late.
You.
Yep.
All right.
Okay. Cal from South Carolina.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, I would like to find out how to put a lien on property. What's my first step? Can I get an assistant from y'all? Because I know nothing about it.
You know, you got to go to court to get a lien on somebody or something, unless you're a mechanic or a contractor or something like that. You could do a mechanic's lien, and even that requires a little bit of an education and understanding. But you can't pull the lien because you have to go to court and give that person due process. But we don't really get involved in that kind of a thing. You know, what kind of a situation is that you're trying to put a lien? Is this a mechanic's lien?
Well, my wife can explain to you more of what it is.
Yes, hi, how you doing?
How you doing?
All right, it was just that I appealed the Supreme Court remitter and asked for a rehearing, and I was denied the hearing. And the lower courts, what they done is they dismissed my deeds. I got a 70% to 80% in deed of the estate of my grandmother.
Uh-huh.
They want to dismiss the deed, and they wrote up their own chart. And said I only do is 1%.
So they're trying to steal your piece of ownership in a property or something?
Yes, and give it over to other heirs. It's one heir out of 19. It's yeah, the one that's been fighting.
I hate to tell you, this, but you gotta gonna have to find a lawyer to deal with that kind of a problem. That's an issue that, and there's a lot of details I'm sure involved in that. The only other kind of cases we're helping people out with, and it works two ways. One is people whose property is being taken by mortgage companies or the tax. Okay, so and they're called non-judicial foreclosures. So we're helping people with that. Also, habeas corpus is if people are stuck in jail or something, or if their children were taken away by CPS, that kind of thing. We'll assist in those things, but, we can't really assist in anything else beyond that. It benefits a couple of things. It allows us to help people in cases that are obvious. People deserve due process. If they're not getting it, habeas corpus is called for. People deserve due process. If you want to take the property away, give them due process. If you don't want to give them due process, you can't take the property away. So those are very cut and dry. And we're also using those cases as evidence concerning the corruption in the court and the game, how they've monetized mortgages and how they're stealing our children and so on. But as far as this kind of a case, we couldn't possibly get involved with that. And unfortunately, the only way to deal with these courts is you're going to have to get a lawyer.
They want to foreclose on the house. But so I'm just trying to put a stop to everything until.
But who's trying to foreclose? A mortgage company
the estate, the home estate is in a mortgage. And
the mortgage company's trying to close it down.
Yeah, they're foreclosing, but at the same time, the Supreme Court and the lower court is trying to, like you say, is confiscate all the property and everything at the same time.
Okay, heirs, okay, and what percentage are you of the ownership?
I'm an 80% heir.
Okay, so you're the major holder. Then you have the ability to clout of the court. Okay, that means you can file the papers. If it's a mortgage trying to steal your property, and that's what they're trying to do, then you can go out to our website, go to the page that I mentioned to the other individual. It's click on Abuse of Courts. And read through that, and then get an intake form, fill it out, make sure you get all the details onto that intake form for Jim, and then we'll start a process to try to help you with that.
Okay.
So it's a mortgage foreclosure, and I'm sure it's probably non-judicial mortgage foreclosure. What's going on in the court, though? What are they saying in the court? How is the court involved in this? Is it a regular mortgage foreclosure that they're kind of stuck in, or because there's a couple of people out of ownership? Or what's the position of the court here?
Well, the position of the court was fixing to put it in one major name, who they felt like was because it's not divisible among 19 heirs.
Uh-huh.
So one person who was, I would say, like I'm an 80% owner, person need to be over everything or should be given everything because I had paid all the taxes for the last 9 years, me, myself, and I. No heir.
So there's no, it's a no-brainer that you're the person that has the ownership, ultimate majority ownership of the property. 80%
So what one heir done is, he is against me in the court for that. And they dismissed my deed. They dismissed my deed, so to speak, and wrote up a chart and brought the chart into the lower court.
Yeah, what they're doing, it's a process that takes time. As soon as they come out after people, they start this process. And the process usually takes at least 2 years, and depending on how much resistance they get, it could take a lot longer than that. But what they're doing is behind the scenes is they're moving through these legal maneuvers, and eventually they will get this property into their name or the name of the trust or whatever it is that they're putting together. It's all they're monetizing these things, and then there's an income that comes out of this, and it just goes on and on and on. But look, you need to First of all, you need to understand, did you see the word nonjudicial foreclosure, or is it a foreclosure that they're doing? I mean, what exactly is the plaintiff's position? The plaintiff is the mortgage company, right?
I guess it would be the mortgage company.
Okay,
that they hold.
So the mortgage company is trying to foreclose on the property, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And in their process of foreclosing, what court are you in? What kind of a court?
I'm just finishing up with the Supreme Court who denied me of, they went against me on every ground.
They always do that. But what court are you in? Is this in a municipal court? Is it in a city court, a town court, a village court, a state court, a county court?
It's a county court, yes.
It's a county court. Okay. All right. I'd like to see the original paper on what they're doing here. In other words, as far as it's a regular foreclosure. That being the case, it's a non-judicial foreclosure, and you're in the court doesn't have jurisdiction. Even though it's a county court, they don't have jurisdiction because they're operating under statutes. But ultimately, again, I don't know how that works out there, but a lot of these states, they'll run it through the court, but at the end of the day, they'll never get a judge's signature on it. Never. Okay, and they'll end up taking your property. But you won't get a decision from a judge. That would be really rare for that to happen, because the judge, I don't know if they know. They probably do know, but if they don't know, they're informed not to put their signature down, because it's a non-judicial foreclosure. If you had due process, they can't prove anything. Probably the people foreclosing on you are probably not even the people that did the original mortgage, and so they changed hands of the contract without your knowledge, just to begin with. I'll bet you your property. How long has the property been in the possession of your family?
It's been in the possession for over 30 years now.
I'll bet you dollars to donuts that property, that mortgage has changed hands numerous times over time. Numerous times, I'll bet you. But in any event,
you're talking about the mortgage company, right? The mortgage company, they sell the mortgage to another company, and along the way, they don't do the proper documentation usually. You know what I mean? And they don't get the proper permissions. They just do what they want to do.
But even the original ones don't have the proper documentation either.
Right. So the more times it changes hands, the worse it is for them, actually. It's better for you because it gives you more of a grounds to go after. Of course, this is just, we're not giving legal advice. We're just educating you so that you can be educated in the court. But we don't, it's for your education this year. Because, we're not allowed to give legal advice,
Okay.
If we had our courts of law, it'd be very simple. You go into the court and you deal with the facts and you end it. And it should be ended justly. But we don't have that.
Oh, okay.
All right. Anyway, think about what you want to do. If you want us to help you out, we'll help you out. We have information and paperwork that you can use, but you got to educate yourself. You got to understand what's going on, and how they steal the property. And right now, there's been a process going on, and it continues to go on to change that property, the deed, and everything into someone else's name, and it's happening behind the scenes.
So that's why I thought about putting a lien on everything until
you gotta be careful
too late.
Next thing you'll end up charging you with a criminal act if you put
a lien. If you had done that before anything happened, then that's a whole different thing. But look at you. You got a stronger thing. You own that property. You see, they'll play the game anyway, saying that the mortgage company has first call on the property. That's a game they'll play. So they would ignore your lien anyway, probably. But you see, you own 80% of the property. You have right of due process. You can't take my property without due process. I need my day in court, in a court of record. And then when they get you to a court, you can make the point, this is not a court of record. What are you going to judge? You know, the judge is trying to judge. This isn't a court of record. You don't have this power of authority. I'll tell you what. I'll move the court in a certain direction, and you have the duty to actually rule my way, because I own this property, and they can't prove nothing. They have no documentation, no sworn affidavits. They have no proof of ownership or mortgage or anything. They have nothing. They have no proof of a contract. There's nothing there. It doesn't exist. And without that, in a court of law, case is done, out.
Right.
But it's not operating as a court of law. That's your problem.
Okay. So. All right.
Okay.
Okay, so I will begin these papers to you then. I do
you
have
get a hold of Jim. Start the process through Jim. Intake at nationallibertyalliance.org. We'll actually go out and fill out the intake form, and Jim will get in touch with you.
All right, sir. I do that. Thank
all
you
right.
so very much.
Thank
right.
you.
Thank you. Okay, looks like Caleb Johnson. Go ahead, you've been unmuted.
All right.
Very good.
Okay, I just wanted to actually make, you know, I'm not calling on so much. I have an issue. I've been working out with the courts, and I was looking over your these statutes, and I just recently came to a discovery, which I don't know if it'd be something you would want to add to the statute codes regulations, and you guys probably already know about this, but the legislative courts are not capable of making a judicial determination, because if they did, then they are they're violating the separations of powers, and they're also inflicting bills of pains and penalties, as well as the bill of attainder. So when you get traffic violations, or when you go to a criminal case that's being dealt with Nisi Prius courts, they literally have no ability to affect you unless they're just trampling on you, and that doesn't even start getting into the lack of due process and everything else. But I also had a question about how do you guys protect yourselves from practicing law without a license? Because you're helping all these people, but how do you guys, because from my investigations, there is no issuance of a license, and it's all bupkis.
Exactly.
We have the word common law everywhere, so we mm-hmm. don't deal with the statutory processes. In other words, equity. We're in common law. You can't practice law. You can practice law anytime you want. The United States Supreme Court has already ruled on that. Even in equity, you can practice, but you better know your business if you're going to do that. You better know the codes and understand. And obviously, you're dealing with people that are stuck in those courts because they're under that process, under that authority of jurisdiction. The people are under none of those authorities. There's no codes. There's no statutes or regulations or anything that control us or our behavior.
So how do you identify your motion is under common law when you put it into the courts versus...
They don't hear it. They don't want to hear it. When I do a traffic thing for myself, mm-hmm. pretty much, most of the time, or more than half the time at least, but most of the time I think I could say, when I send a paper into the court, I usually never hear back from them again. But the rest of the times that I do, it's not worth me going too much more than that. I'll pay the fine and move on and throw it into a file, and maybe one day I'll go back and sue them all. But I haven't got time for that. But, these traffic violations, that's they're all unlawful, you know.
Well, that was something else I was looking at possibly doing was distributing pamphlets to people going to court, explaining the basic premise of this, not charging them or anything, because under the First Amendment, I have the freedom of speech, and I also have the freedom to assemble, even if it's just myself, because I wanted to basically go out in front of the courthouse, basically print out all the different constitutions they're violating, the fact that they can't be doing pains and penalties, and bills.
You're going to get a visit from some cop out of that court to tell you to move on.
And then that's actually part of the reason why I was looking for an organization to join, because the whole point is you can't fight alone. And But so I was trying to also looking for suggestions on how I could start actually educating, informing, and I mean, not just, you know, part of what your organization, your primary functioning organization was the whole building grand jury, common law grand juries, but I'm also interested in not only trying to disseminate that information to the individuals, but I'm trying to find a way to start disseminating this information in regards of how to protect your rights and all that other stuff with people. And I was looking for suggestions on how about going to do that.
Well, we have courses. You know, we facilitate an education, communication, and organization of the people on the grassroots level. And we're trying to teach the people how to have government by consent to take up these places, you know, take up the political power through the committeemen, take up the judicial power through the administrations for the juries. That's to begin with. But also, in our course, of course, you teach the Constitution, because you need to know the Constitution if you want to protect yourself and your rights. You need to know our heritage. You need to know how this came to be, the arguments and the debates. So you need to be somewhat familiar with all this stuff, and understand the difference between law and equity, and where the jurisdiction lies on whatever the case may be. And in most cases, these people, none of these courts have jurisdiction over the people. The federal courts have no jurisdiction over the people. We're not subject to the laws of the United States as far as the equity side of things, the codes, you know, the titles and stuff. But even in all, you know, these traffic courts and all these town courts, village courts, they're nisi prius courts. They have no power, no authority to fine or incarcerate or to do anything. But they do. Why do they get away with it? Because people believe they have that power. You know, reality is the way one perceives it. If you perceive these people have the power, you're going to give them all your money to stay out of jail.
Now, see, that's what I was hoping to do is, you know, you guys are doing what you're doing, and it's great for everybody to come to you guys and say, hey, I'm going to get educated and stuff like that, but how can I be an activist on my part and kind of fan the flames?
Well, first of all, you have to get an education. That's where it starts. That's what we're doing. Second of all, after you get your education, you know, you want to take it further than that. There's a whole bunch of, you can take it a lot further than that. We have the, you know, it would be self-education. It's all self-education anyway. But under our education, you know, go study the essays and lectures that we have. You see the founding documents, the political information and different books and the judicial process. And we teach all that stuff. You know, you just download it and read it and go through it. And, you know, really the more time you spend with something, the more it sinks in and the more knowledgeable. And then you get these unique, realizations, your epiphanies, let's call it. You know, a couple of things come together and you get an epiphany. Wow, hey, I come to understand something and on how things work that I didn't know before. And so we try to empower the people on the grassroots level to do what they have to do, and it's exactly it. You know, inside of our course is also part of how to access the court and how the court system works.
Sure.
So all of that is in there. We teach all that. Now it's up to the people to step up on the grassroots level, to become committeemen, to defend themselves, to be able to articulate themselves in the court if they want to do that. Understand the difference between the two courts, empower the people. Knowledge is power.
So if I'm getting this correctly, when I looked up the word civil, it's equity. And in equity, the only thing the court has jurisdiction is if there's
civil,
a contract.
Civil courts or municipality courts, or civil law is municipality law. That's what it is. It's the law of the city.
So it's just basically...
It has nothing to do with us.
Okay. No, I was just curious because I was the whole idea of civil traffic violations or whatever. Civil, I always thought that you had to have some. They had to have some type of contract with you.
Well, yeah, they do, and they don't. But you know, even if you go into the state courts or even the federal courts, you go into the federal court. Rule 2 turned everything into civil courts. There is no more law and equity. There's no more separation. It's all one court. They fuse it all together, so they think they can. But that's what they did. That's subversion.
I've been studying law kind of like for the last 2 or 3 years, getting as much information as I can on my own spare time. And one thing I haven't been able to really get a good grasp on is I understand jurisdiction in the sense of, hey, you have a contract or we're operating under common law. But it's I'm trying to understand. I mean,
well, here's the thing. Look, we're battling a battle. A lot of these battles cannot be won, but they can eventually. You win the war. That's what we're looking to do, is win the war. Our battle is in the federal courts. I don't know if you've read the papers that we filed. You can find the papers under the grand jury and click on action against the judiciary and start reading these papers. You know, you can start from the top and work your way down, and you'll start to realize and understand what we're doing and how we're doing it, because it gives the whole picture. It shows all the violations, all of the destruction that these courts have done, the acts of treason, sedition. So read through that, and you'll start to get an education just through that. But to understand, the key thing is to win in the federal courts, to take control of courts of law. The people need to control courts of law. Government controls can control the courts of equity, but the people, free and separate from the government, need to control that. And we're going to do that through administrations. This goes all the way back to the Magna Carta. We're not making this stuff up. This is the way it was. This is the way we see the beginning of this stuff, going back to the Magna Carta. And you know, where the four individuals go out to seek out the problem and try to solve that problem. And if they can't solve the problem, they call the 25. They're part of the 25, but in the case of what we're doing, we'd be outside the 25. But they'd call the 25. That's the grand jury, okay, to deal with the problem, to secure and fix that problem. And if they can't do it, then they send it into the courts. They put out an indictment, and they send it into the courts, and the tribunal will decide for you. And that's the process we should be under, and that's the process we're pushing back for to get. We, the people, can have government by consent if we control our courts of law. No government agents need to be in there as far as a controlling factor. A magistrate does not get to make judicial decisions. They're ultimately there. They're administrator of the court. They make sure that the process keeps moving along. It tries to keep things fair and going forward. And at the end of the day, they need to secure down on paper what the will of that tribunal is. And once they got that onto the paper, they put their seal, the signature, and they send it down to the sheriff for execution. That's the process of a court of law. The equity courts operate differently. That has a judge in it, and generally doesn't have a tribunal of 12 and so on. It's a whole different process, and they're dealing with equity issues, titles, codes, statutes, things of that nature.
Okay. All right.
So we need to win on that level. If we win on the federal level, the next step is to take control, to get into the state courts and take control of that. That's a no-brainer. Easy one to solve. Once you can get justice in the federal court, you can require justice in the state courts, because they're violating people's unalienable rights of due process, and they need to have courts of justice open. They have concealed courts of justice. You can't find one. You go fill out their papers, it's all about civil law, civil cases. It has nothing to do with courts of law. Okay? And it doesn't even, you can't even, they don't even separate equity from law. And they're two different animals, okay? Two different
right.
animals. One's oil, one's water.
Okay.
So we need to fix that on that level. We fix the federal courts, state courts, no-brainer. The other courts will all close down eventually because they're violating people's unalienable rights, and they don't have that power and authority to do it. Those could just be shut down without a problem, and the days of tickets are gone, and we'll be back to the sheriff. We'll be the real only cop around, really. You know,
so I was thinking about asking. First, I'd have to find out if the sheriff has any clue about his oath of office. And if
totally brain dead, most of them.
And because I was thinking about the times I do have
and
to. Go.
And I really shouldn't say most of them, but I'll tell you, most of them that I've met are totally brain dead. But you know, there are a few good ones here or there that I've met, and maybe there's a lot more than I realize. I see this guy out in California, pretty brave guy, stepping up and going up against the state and saying, no way, we're not going to allow it.
So could you, if they did have a clue, could you actually have a deputy go with, request a deputy to go to court with you to protect you if they do decide to try to trample on your rights in the sense of...
Well, we just spoke to one of the individuals early with his 12-year-old daughter. That's the first thing I would do is go down and talk to the sheriff and say, what are you going to do to help me? You know,
okay, so
I would
is,
expect
that,
that, that sheriff to go down and talk to the cop to begin with and start squashing it on that end if possible. But if it's too late to go into the courts, I would expect that sheriff would send one of his deputies with me to protect my, the unalienable right, my unalienable right, which extends to my child.
Okay. So the recourse for the individual is going to end up, or the people, is going to end up coming through common law grand juries. If we had state militias, if the sheriffs actually stood up to protect us, and what other recourses would we have if we were dealing with a true common law?
Look, at if you're dealing with a true common law, all this stuff wouldn't happen because the grand jury, the administrations for the grand jury, which is the investigative body for the grand jury, orientate the grand jury and the trial jury and prepare them for what they're up to, you know, what's up and coming, and they have the opportunity to go out and fix the problem. You know, they get a phone call against a bureaucrat with a situation. They can make a phone call to the bureaucrat and say, what's going on? How come you won't give this person the information they're looking for? Or whatever the thing may be. And fix it on a phone call. And if they can't fix it, then the grand jury will get involved and they'll fix it. And if they can't fix it, they'll send it into the court for the trial jury to deal with. But you see, once we have control of the juries, the people have control of the juries on the grassroots level, the regular people, okay, once they have that control, then they have the power to indict these people that are in office and violating their oaths of office. If we take control of the political process through the committee man, we can recall them on a dime. Just let's pull them out of office. They're not doing the will of the people. They're taking bribes. They're taking all that funny money from the special interest groups. We're sending them there to do the will of the people, and instead they're doing the will of big business, big pharma, whatever. Let's get rid of them. Let's pull them out of office. So you can make a phone call. I'll tell you what. Here's how powerful the committee man is. This is an absolute guarantee. If the county chairman makes a call to anybody that's elected within that election district process, you know, that electric subdivision or whatever it is, whether it's a representative in Washington or a representative up in the capital of your state, if that county committee were to make a phone call to any of those individuals, say, we want to talk with you. Were you available on Friday at a certain time or whatever the case may be? They're going to come down. And they're going to talk, and you're going to straighten them up, and they're going to obey you. That's the power of the committee man. They don't exist at this moment because they've been expunged, they've been concealed and hidden, and there is a facade there. The committee man in power and in process right now is just a facade, no different than that of the Federal Reserve. It's a facade. It appears to be something that it isn't, and it's not. So we need to resurrect the committee man, the authority. The law and even the statutes are there to do it. But even if the statutes aren't, it's an unalienable right to control our political process. But they're there, and we just got to get people elected and take those positions. The question is, do the people want their nation back? Are they willing to put their time in to take their nation back for themselves and their posterity and their neighbors and friends? Are they willing to do that? And unfortunately, sometimes I think they're not. When I look at the numbers of people volunteering to become committee men, I'm depressed over that. But we'll continue pushing, and hopefully we'll take our political process back. But it's up to the people. Maybe they don't want to do it. You know, it appears that maybe they don't. Maybe they're afraid that they can't accumulate the knowledge, that they're not able, because we've been programmed to think we need a lawyer when we have a legal thing, or we need a priest or a rabbi or something when we have a religious concern. No, go straight to God. No, go straight to the source and do it yourself. Take control of your own life. So. You don't need to be a professor. You don't need to be some kind of a highly educated individual in law or anything to take control of your political process, your judicial process, and even your dealings in court. A lot of it is really simple, just that they've hidden it from the people, and they've concealed common law courts, so you don't see them no more. They're not available. They want their money to go into a court, and that's unjust. That's against the law. You can't ask for money for justice. You can't pay for justice.
No.
It's unlawful.
Do you have on the website for the NLA website, like pamphlets for like sheriffs, committeemen?
We have everything. NationalLibertyAlliance.org.
Okay, so where would I find that on the website? Where I like pamphlets, something I could actually hand out to people?
Well, look at, you know, well, we do have pamphlets. I don't remember exactly where they're at. Jan, you may know if you want to pipe in, if you know where it's at, because we do have some flyers up here. You'll have to poke around. But if you go to our website, okay, mm-hmm. right on our front page, okay, to really understand what we're doing and what our plan is the very first thing you see is the NLA plan. And if you click on that, okay, it's a 23 pages. Okay, but anybody that's really interested in trying to figure out what we're doing and if they're interested in doing it with us, just read that paper, 23 pages. It lays out the whole program, what we're doing, government by consent. It just talks about the judicial power and the political power, how to get involved, how to take control, what the rule of law really is, and the difference between a right and left that doesn't really exist, and talks about the committeeman and the power and the authority and so on. Is you know, everything... It's a good synopsis of what we're doing. Now, it's a long, that's pretty big to give out as a flyer, but if you really wanted to give somebody that's really interested, that's what you would give them maybe. But we do have flyers on the site, but I just don't remember exactly where they're
at. It's okay. I would rather just distribute your actual plan, because the whole idea is if people are interested, people are interested. Now they're not just sitting on the pamphlet, it's if they do decide they want to go further into it, they actually...
Right, and just, you know, look, at you got to see the interest in the person, whether they really want or they're just going to take the 23 pages and throw it away. You got to make a judgment call on that.
You know, for me, if I just get the opportunity just to get it in their hands, if the person reads it, they don't. If they do, mm-hmm. they do. And even if they don't do anything with it, but at least they read it, at least they are now more knowledgeable than they
were. Well, maybe they'll set it down someplace and someone else will pick it up.
All right. Well, I appreciate you answering all my questions, and I appreciate for everything you guys are doing.
Hey, thanks for calling. Gerard, I think it's time to go home. Did we lose Gerard?
I guess I muted myself. I didn't know that.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know, the time to go home or what?
Oh, yeah, we're 12 minutes over at this point.
Well, I see Brent is back in. Maybe he wanted to say something?
Yeah, I don't know. He kept coming up. I don't know. I'll click on him.
Yeah, I just clicked on him. Yeah, Brent, okay. Did you want to say something?
No, thanks. I'm good.
Okay, well, you came back through the roll somehow, but we're kind of done now anyway. So, let's see. Was anybody in there last week that we missed? I don't think so. I don't know if Dan from Carolinas was. He's been in a couple times, but we're down to our last.
Hey, well, anyone in the queue right now, if you get in early, you know, in the beginning, just as soon as we click that button for questions, Q&A, get into the queue so you'll be on the top of it, you know. So.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, I guess we'll close down or what?
Hit the recording, and thanks for coming, everybody, and we'll see you next week. Same time, same station. Thanks.